meeting of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council to order. And let the record show that we do have a quorum present for the meeting. Members, you should have the packet for today's meeting before you. Very important items that we need to take up. We need to finalize the 25-year funding framework. We are going to also need to approve the administrative budget and, very importantly, to approve our fiscal year 2012 appropriations bill that will be forwarded to the governor's office and the legislature here very shortly. Members, we have some other items on the agenda, but the agenda is before you. Motion to approve the agenda as drafted.
So moved.
Any further discussion on the motion? None. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. The meeting from last week, December 6th, is in your packet. Give you just a minute or two to look over that. Fairly lengthy, 6 pages. I've taken a look at it. Looks in order to me. Motion to approve. We call this the meeting summary as drafted. Further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the meeting summary has been approved. Executive Director's Report. Bill, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll be short today. It's only been a week. We spent the week working on language. I think you're looking at version 9 of the bill. And I wanted to remind members that in their packet is a schedule for next year. So we have that. And that's it for the Executive Director's Report today.
Right, wonderful. All right. I guess just time. Any questions of Bill right now, just in terms of the office? I think everyone knows that Bill's office and Sandy and Heather's office has moved down the hall. So it's the first door on the right if you come around the corner here. So just down the hall. But it's time for questions. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can we amend the schedule? Because January 18th is, I know, a problem for a number of us for our first meeting.
Your meeting, so absolutely.
So it's a. I know it's really bad for me, and I know it's really bad for David.
And me.
And Les.
17th works.
Well, I think a bigger issue is, and we were talking about this morning, whether or not the full slate of appointments will be made by that time. And I don't know if that's the case. I'm assuming, Greg, that the appointing authorities have to wait until January 4th before they can make the appointments. They can't make those before the terms expire. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So it's just unclear about the timing of these appointments.
Should we wait until the appointments are made before we schedule a meeting?
Well, I think the first order of business is to have council elections of officers, and I would say that you would certainly, I would think, would want to have a full slate of 12 members to choose from instead of 6 or 7 or 8 members to choose from at that time. It would be my preference that the council waits until all the appointments have been made and then convene a meeting, and we should be able to pull it together in a fairly short order that time of year for the purpose of election of officers. Dave, notwithstanding, yeah, you may be in Iceland or something.
Not at that time of year.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
One of the things you might want to think about doing, you're also going to have a legislative schedule going on for the next meeting, is you could plan it like a tentative Friday afternoon late in January. Might be a good time to do it, because most committees do not meet on Friday afternoon. So if you just plan it for late January, Friday afternoon, a tentative plan is, based on whether the members are appointed or not, you can move it back. But it might not be a bad idea to get something scheduled.
Yeah.
And on Friday, Friday afternoon would be a good time to do it.
Just a quick question to Janelle or Greg, or I guess any legislators for that matter. Do you, in a session like this, do they typically start meeting in committee structure fairly shortly after you convene? So in mid to early January, you will be having committee meetings?
Okay.
So I think that's a good suggestion. What would be a late Friday in January? Probably the latest. Does anyone have a calendar?
Is the meeting scheduled on Fridays?
There's
multiple
Fridays.
That's what Friday morning.
Friday morning.
Friday morning. But then you need to come in on Thursday night again.
Well, and that's not a problem, but the what is the last Friday in January? What day of the month? I don't have a calendar.
28th.
If that meeting was one week later and it was the first Friday in February, would that cause anybody great stress?
No.
Because
Two weeks later?
Does that cause anybody stress? Because certainly.
February what?
February 11th.
The second Friday in February?
Yes.
I see everyone kind of saying that will work at least for the members present. So let's change that schedule and staff make a note. February 11th, Friday, the council would plan to reconvene as a newly constituted set of members.
Morning, afternoon.
I guess I would defer to the out-state members what's preferable. Well, I guess, Bill, you would be traveling back home.
If you're talking February 11th, Friday?
Yeah.
I haven't been there yet. I would be traveling back.
Could you guys come in the night before?
How long is that meeting? Well, how long would someone suspect the meeting would last if that's the only issue on the docket? Hour?
Yeah. And you could do it on a conference call. I mean, you could get piped in.
Except that you can't.
Even for election of officers, there's no special provisions for.
Mr. Chair, I think in your bylaws, I know in the LCCMR, they actually allow absentee voting.
Yes, we do. That's the only instance where we allow.
I knew there was some special provision for voting of officers.
I know that in the past for election of officers, you couldn't vote by, you had to vote by proxy. You couldn't have, does that rule change in our language this year? Because I remember I attended by phone, okay, at the one meeting and had given a proxy, but we didn't need it. You know, that was back in.
The only time you can vote absentee or by proxy, and as I understand them, they are equivalents, is for election of officers.
And that is okay.
So, Scott, I guess if weather's bad or, you know, you just can't break away, you could either participate on a conference call or vote in absentia.
Very good.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm saying is if we're going to come in, spend a half day travel, there's going to be items on the agenda that it'll be a month and a half, 2 months, and let's make the full work day out of it if we can, if it's needed.
Well, part of it is you're going to have some new members on the council and just a chance to get to know who they are and them who you are and a little bit of history of what the council's operating procedures are.
And meeting law.
Yeah. Yep. So, but anyway, at least we do have that date changed, so the February 11th, which is a Friday, would be the next meeting of the council, assuming that we get our business finished today.
And if there's any possible, 2 o'clock would be perfect. I mean, 2 to 4 or something like that, because that doesn't require that, you know, me burning up the day before to get here. I could come up that morning, do the business, and make it home in 1 day. That would be preferable.
Okay. Thank you. Members, the next item on the agenda is item 5, and this is an action item, and this is a request for an amendment to an accomplishment plan. Bill, do you want to give us a little bit more detail on this one?
Right. In your package, you have a series of items, starting with the Rossard Sam Outdoor Heritage Council, FY11 recommendation accomplishment plan, which is the accomplishment plan for this project. The LSOHC questionnaire that came from the applicants, Great River Green, a green sheet that depicts on one side the cash flow items by project, and on the other side, a chart of cash flow. And the request that's before the council is a request for an advance to solve cash flow needs. And we have here to address this issue. Deb Karasoff, the Great River Green, Wayne Sames of the Department of Natural Resources Grant Management Unit, and Deb, your director.
Hi.
Board of Directors.
Correct. Kevin Patty, he's on the board of directors of Great River Green. He's on our finance committee, and he's also a financial consultant.
Good morning, Ms. Karasoff and other members. Welcome. And if you could just very quickly go through and explain the request that you're and the action you're looking for from the council regarding the accomplishment plan.
Thank you, Chairman Kilgore, members of the council, Mr. Becker. I appreciate the opportunity. I will be very quick. I just have a few points. Very quickly, to remind you, Greening is the lead for the NOCA Sand Plain Partnership Grant, $747,000 for restoration and enhancement work in the NOCA Sand Plain Ecological Region. It's across 11 sites, including wildlife management areas, county parks, scientific and natural areas, the Carlos Avery and Sherburne National Wildlife Refuge, and Cedar Creek Ecosystem Reserve. We are requesting a revision to our accomplishment plan on page 12, underlined and bold. You will find a brief budget narrative for cash advance based on invoices. Very briefly, the winter is a peak period for the work proposed in this grant. The highest priority sites for the partnership are Oak Savannah and Oak Woodland, where woody invasion is the key problem due to absence of fire. Harvesting and removing the invasives is a primary tool. The sites are sensitive. Many have wetlands associated with them, so we need to go in when the ground is frozen. For many of the biggest projects, we have a start this winter in order to finish within the 3 years of the grant period. The grant will play out over 3 years, but the major workload, again, is scheduled for this winter, as you can see in the submitted expenditure forecast. Nearly three-quarters of the Outdoor Heritage Funds are going to vendors for contract work and supplies, and that's the darker color in the bar graph. All of that is going to vendors. We have multiple large projects happening at the same time.
Excuse me, the bar graph. I'm
not bar graph. What do you call this? Line chart. This one.
And just to direct us all to that particular piece, I don't think I... On the back, okay, on the back of the green chart. All right. So, members, this is what we're looking at. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So, and on the back of that, you have a chart of the 11 sites, and you can see that there are multiple projects all happening at the same time, and again, many of them starting this winter. We will anticipate that this will result in an overlap of invoices, some of them quite large. And if this occurs, fronting the payment will cause a cash flow problem. Many of the vendors that we work with are small businesses. Extending the net from 30 to 60 days would place an undue burden on these small businesses. We also have subcontracts that we have to that are passing through us with the University of Minnesota and Isanti County. Using our line of credit is not the best solution. We have a $100,000 line of credit. If we draw on it, we are charged 1% plus prime. This would be an additional financial burden to the organization and add to the cost of each project. We have worked with the Department of Natural Resources for a proposed plan with several measures of risk control. Semi-monthly invoicing by subcontractors and vendors will equal smaller invoices. Staggering invoicing among vendor contracts. If advances are made, they will be paid, based on actual invoices for work completed. We will improve the cash flow management through the use of trend analysis and projection, the first step of which is the chart before you. And in the future grants, we will use that understanding of cash flow management to put forward a grant agreement that pays partners directly as opposed to through Great River Greening. That was in the case of the university and Isanti County. And finally, we will select projects based also on the timing and nature of the work. We've worked with Department of Natural Resources staff to develop a method, as I said, to control the risk. And I would like to ask Wayne Sames of Department of Natural Resources to explain those details.
Good morning, Mr. Sames.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. You have a handout that sort of outlines what we think the process would be. We think we can do this without any big problem.
Excuse me, which handout is
that? Well, it's a one page, it just says briefing. I think it was just handed out.
So this is, so who's the author of this? Is this the Department of Natural Resources?
DNR. And this sort of outlines how we think that this would work. You can see that the grant agreement does allow for advances, but of course those advances have to be approved in the accomplishment plans and have to be approved by the council. So we would not, on our own, go ahead with the advances. We have to go through the approval process, obviously. But if the council does approve the advance process, we think that we can work this out. Ms. Karasoff has kind of gone through some of the controls that we have, but they're listed on here as well. And basically, they're based on incremental advances. So we would ask that we get invoices, first of all, for the expenses that are incurred. Those invoices would come in. Those essentially, we would then make a payment. That payment essentially would be an advance because it's only based on those invoices. But we would require within a short period of time that we actually get the actual checks, copies of the checks. And then within another brief period of time, we would actually get the final canceled checks. So we think that in order to accommodate this cash flow problem that we have here, that this would be a pretty easy mechanism to deal with. And we've done this sort of thing before. So I think from our standpoint, this is a workable situation, and we could use this process to do it.
Ms. Karasoff, any other comments regarding the request? Or?
No, I opened myself up to questions.
I guess, Phil, please.
I just wanted to point out to council members that in the payment conditions in the appropriations log for fiscal year 11, there is a sentence that says reasonable amounts may be advanced to projects to accommodate cash flow needs or to match federal share. So there's express authority to make this advance.
Ms. Karasoff, question. Looking at your graph of your cash flow over the projected three fiscal years.
Yes.
And then looking at page 15 of your accomplishment plan, I'm looking at your leverage. So these are non-outdoor heritage fund dollars you have in hand and then an anticipated column. If I'm reading this right, it's given the leverage that you anticipate for this work from your partners, this cash flow problem is really only a problem over the first few months of calendar 2011. Is that right? In other words, let's say beyond May or June of 2011, looking at your projections of expenditures and invoice expenses, they're substantially less than some of the leverage that might be available to cover those costs. Am I interpreting that correct?
I would agree with you. I think, as I said, it's this winter is the bulk of the work, and it is when we are still gathering the leverage. We do have several pieces already in hand. For example, the National Wild Turkey Federation has enabled us to start right away on the Rice Area Sportsman's Club. And it will lessen with time as we get more of the leverage. And I should say, again, that this will only be based on need. And we hope, because it's a burden on both the Department of Natural Resources and Red River Green, that we won't always have to resort to this.
So were you proposing a modification that would give them the ability to get in advance for the first 6 months?
So, members, if you look at the accomplishment plan on page 12, right in the middle of the page under budget, that's underlying staff has put together a recommendation of a modification to the accomplishment plan. So, why don't you take a look at that?
If I could answer Mr. Hartwell, the idea is that once we get invoices based on work done, we submit those invoices as part of our cash advance request to DNR. So it's not just an advance, please give us $50,000. It really is based on invoice for actual work.
I get that. My question was whether or not it's really a necessary adjustment just for the first 6 months of 2011, and after that it goes back to the normal procedure.
That's how I would interpret it, and I guess I would... Can we put a friendly amendment? It sounds like that will work. So I guess I would suggest that we amend the proposed language indicating that this would be applied only for the first 6 months
of 2011.
Of calendar 2011, not fiscal year.
I see.
Jim.
Yeah, Ms. Kirisoff, I'm curious, what type of work are you doing in the winter months, and why are you going across wetlands? I didn't quite understand that.
Ms. Kirisoff?
Thank you. This is harvesting invasive species, buckthorn, cedar, all sorts of species that have invaded the oak savanna and the oak woodland. You'll have people coming in, logging in, contractors will come in and then haul it away.
And so then what happens to the root system?
We treat them with safe chemicals.
In the winter?
Yes. It's called basal bark stem treatment, and it is safe, and it is cheaper in many ways than some of the traditional Roundup that is sometimes used for buffalo.
And you mentioned going across wetlands. Why do you go? I didn't understand that.
Well, it's only sometimes with if you want the ground to be frozen. It's not that we're driving across wetlands, but you simply, if it's even softer around the edges, you want the ground to be frozen, which is why we work in the winter.
Thank you.
Any other questions regarding Rick?
Since we're coming back in February, maybe we can get a progress report.
It'll be really
our first time, and it'll be 3 months.
Yeah, actually, that will be right about at the peak of their activity, so I think that's a good suggestion. Any other questions? Scott?
Not particularly to this request. Are there any other advance requests in the wings bill? Or do you perceive that this is going to be something that the council is going to be doing more often?
There are no other advance requests in the wings other than those that might be connected to the easement monitoring and enforcement accounts that we'll discuss later. And I don't expect the council to do this very often at all. And there's a lot of concern putting money out without having a reimbursement or an expenditure to reimburse. And our payment conditions are reimbursement conditions.
Another suggestion as we go forward and we look at our proposal requests, one thing we should include. If you look at what we asked of them in the questionnaire, question D1C, which is on the third page of the questionnaire, the only question we asked them is, requesters, is, do you currently have the capacity to get the work done that you are requesting dollars for in whatever? I think that needs to be to include something about the ability to manage a grant of this size, including cash flow needs, so we don't get into this problem again where, after the fact, we're having to come back and revise a work plan based on the inability of the recipient to manage cash flow. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, and maybe I missed this, but have we ever done this before?
No, this is the first time that we've had this request.
This is the first time the council has had the request. The Environmental Trust Fund has done it once, to my knowledge.
So if this request is not approved, what happens?
Thank you. I think we would either file multiple invoices during a given week, which would be a burden. I recognize that this is a burden with DNR, but it would be an additional burden to DNR. We would have to borrow against our line of credit, which means our partners would have to raise more money for the different projects. Or we would actually move some of our smaller scale projects off to year two or year three.
So
none of those are really ideal solutions, and I appreciate changes to our request, and I'm hoping that this will be a workable solution.
What? Oh, David.
I have to say, you know, borrowing against your line of credit, $100,000 at 5% interest for 2 months is not going to put a huge burden on your partners or yourself. You ought to be able to handle that. I don't think that's a legitimate concern.
That was my question, was what's the liability, the additional liability? And are we talking a couple $1,000s?
Yeah, $1,000 maybe.
Scott?
One of the statements that you made, you said that if you had to borrow against your line of credit, that it was 1% plus prime, which would raise the cost of the project. Would that indicate that those interest charges would then be charged out against the grant and paid for by us anyway?
No, absolutely not. The SAR Council, we follow very strictly what the SAR Council can pay for and what cannot. All the match that we raise and our partners raise helps to cover the expenses that are not covered by the SAR, but are legitimate expenses for a project.
Ms. Karasoff, have you estimated, following up on Dave's question, if in fact you did have to borrow on a line of credit for a short term, what that cost would be to you and your partners?
No, I have not. I could get that information to you if you'd like.
I can tell you it's about $400 a month at $100,000, plus or minus. I don't know if they have a floor on the line of credit. Most of them do at this point.
And we're talking about just a gap between when payments are made from Great River Greening to the point in which the department can then turn around an invoice and send a check back. Is that right, Mr. Sames? Is that
Mr. I think the, as I understand it, there is a gap between the time that they receive the invoices and the time that they would actually make the payment, and then we would get canceled checks, which normally is the documentation that we would need to make the reimbursement. So I think that it seems to be the problem, is that there's a time period there, a timeline period, and a cash flow period during that time. So
some of these businesses are, again, they're very small businesses. They're running close to the bone, so to speak. They have a part-time accountant, and the waiting, again, not just for the payment, cutting of the checks and payment, but then also waiting for the paid invoices. Sometimes several weeks can pass by.
So Mr. Sames, in general, from the time you receive a canceled check, and it might not be from Great River, but for any partner that you're doing third-party agreements with, to the time a check is dispersed to the third party, what are we talking about? Are we talking a month, 2 months, a couple of days?
Mr. Chairman, in most cases, if we don't have a problem with the documentation, which is the majority of the time, and it's normally fine, we can usually get a check processed within about a week. Now, sometimes there are, you know, backlogs and so forth, but that's, you know, sometime within a week or so of receiving that canceled check.
Okay.
There can be complications, and usually the thing that does hold it up is if we do have documentation where we're not sure if we have all the information, and then we have to go back and check and so forth. Until we get that, then we don't start processing the checks.
So it sounds as well that if you received in advance that documentation of those expected canceled checks, so that you were aware of what the magnitude and the itemized expenses were, it sounds like that would also help expedite the check cutting process.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it would. I think we'd know pretty much what's coming in that case. So.
Any further questions? Members, we have a motion. We have a proposed amendment to the accomplishment plan on page 12. And is there anyone willing to make a motion to amend the accomplishment plan? Rick?
I'll move to amend the accomplishment plan.
Okay. So we have a motion to amend the accomplishment plan. And would it be a friendly amendment to suggest that for only the first 6 months of calendar year 2011?
To have a report back.
And we have a report back. So discussion on that motion. Hearing no further discussion. All those in favor of the amendment to the accomplishment plan, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, the next item on the agenda is the 25-year framework. Hopefully the end of a very long process, but a very productive process of laying out a framework for evaluating use of the outdoor heritage funds over the 25 years of the amendment. Judy Grew is here with us again this morning. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
I'm sorry. Yes, Paul.
I'd just like to point out that in your package you have a revised 25-year framework based on comments at the last meeting and the working group. A staff recommendation to address, I was thinking of sheet of paper, to address an issue that seemed to be shared by a number of commentors regarding the treatment of aquatic habitat, and then a stapled document that has all of the comments received both by the through the computerized internet and by snail mail, PDF, and a variety of other methods.
So with that, Judy, again, this is an action item, members, to approve this framework. So with that, I'll turn the floor over to you, Judy.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Judy Group from Management Analysis and Development. I'm here to present the final, proposed final 25-year framework report. First, just a status update on sort of where we're at with the drafting of the report. As you know, you met last week, December 6th, to review the previous draft report, and we collected some of your suggestions either for changes to that document or for additional clarification. The next morning, we reconvened our working group that has been working throughout the summer to consider your questions and make appropriate changes to the draft report. We also reviewed the comments that had been received by December 6th to see if there were any issues identified by the commenters that might require us to either clarify our language or change anything in the draft. And on that date, December 7th, we had only 5 comments in. We reviewed them and we didn't see anything that would require a change to the draft. From there, at the conclusion of our meeting, after thanking everyone for their hard work throughout the summer and into the fall and winter, I mentioned that the number one item on my project manager worry list was that we would get some sort of stop the presses comment on Friday afternoon, just as the comment period was closing. And I think I jinxed it, because that is exactly what happened. We received some comments on the measurement of the aquatic habitat the state starting on Friday, as the snow was starting to fall. And we did not have time to reconvene our working group that afternoon, make appropriate changes in the report before the redraft was sent out to you by FedEx on Friday afternoon. So what we did, due to those comments that people sent in on the measurement of the aquatic habitat of the state, is earlier this week, we consulted with the staff who performed those measurements, and we have a separate document for you on a change that we might make to the report due to those comments on the aquatic habitat of the state. I wanted to point out on that, on the measurement of the aquatic habitat estate, that our original estimates within the conservation estate of aquatic habitat were originally a lot more nuanced than presenting the entire public waters inventory as publicly protected. I'm going to read straight from the method notes from Aaron Spence, who was performing that analysis. The original attempt was to quantify protected aquatic habitat by including all lakes whose area was 50% or greater within lands that were identified as protected terrestrial habitat. And that was an attempt to address protected shoreline as an important factor influencing water quality and aquatic habitat. At that time, we still had some technical issues to iron out. But ultimately, when we performed that analysis and we backed the map up visually, the it's if you've ever looked at a GIS analysis, the GIS analysis maps, the polygons representing aquatic habitat, when we backed those maps up to the statewide scale, they were tiny little dots that we could not see at a statewide scale, that one would only be able to see if we zoomed in on those maps. And we realized that while the numbers might have some integrity visually, we were not presenting an adequate story of protected aquatic habitat. We reviewed that issue with our advisory group, and they suggested that we back up to presenting the entire public waters inventory, but then caveat that that presentation of the data was an overstatement rather than an understatement of protected aquatic habitat. Then the report writing and editing started to happen, and the caveat on the data got separated from the presentation of the data. What we're suggesting to do is to move the caveat on the data that mentions and clarifies that the presentation of protected aquatic habitat is an overstatement, and we acknowledge that it's an overstatement. And that would help help the reader understand that particular map within the report. That was the biggest substantive change that we needed to consider. The other changes that we made, we summarized in a one-pager for you. This was tucked into the first page of the draft reports that were FedExed to you. The table is showing the page number of the original drafts that you reviewed last week, the change that we made, and the reason why we made it. Most of these changes were changes that you suggested. We thought by giving you just the table, you could see very easily what has changed from today's version of the report compared to last week's version of the report. Other than that aquatic habitat change that we suggested, we also looked into the integrity of some of the restoration and enhancement baseline numbers that you had asked us to look into and double-check the integrity of those numbers, how they were estimated, and the change over the base, and those numbers checked out. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We're getting extra copies of that description of changes made.
Okay.
We didn't repack it in the packet.
Oh, okay. That was in the document that was FedExed to your home addresses.
So you might want to go over it in detail.
Okay. She just took it. So. Sorry about that. If you take a look at your draft, on the cover page, we simply changed the title of the report to make it more descriptive. We noticed that we didn't mention the Outdoor Heritage Fund on the cover page. We were mentioning the council's name. So we just wanted to make that more descriptive. On the flip side of the cover page, at the council's suggestion, we added your names and your occupations. And if you wouldn't mind just double-checking to make sure that we listed those correctly, we pulled them from your bios on the Wasatch Sam's website. So if you have any edits or changes to those, please let me know. On page one, we added some headers. We referenced the 10-year plan. In the second paragraph, we added additional information on the intent or purpose of the three scenarios and added a footer to guide people to page two. And that was just for people who are only going to read the executive summary to give them a better visual aid and a better description of what lies within the report. On the second, the other two changes are also within the executive summary. We compressed the format, added additional headers and footers, added a bulleted list of the numerous appendices to the report and the data that they present, and we also added a next steps paragraph because we had heard from folks about, well, where do you go from here? So we added a paragraph on, well, what are the next steps? On page six, we just made some corrections to some meeting dates. remove the reference to the Citizens League review because that arrangement with the Citizens League fell through. On page 12, at your suggestion, we changed throughout that chapter our wording of non-habitat to develop or agricultural land in figures and within the text. You requested a better word than non-habitat because that word was implying that nothing lived there, and we didn't want to make that implication, so we tried to find a better word to describe that. On pages 15 through 19, we inserted new maps. We noticed that on a black and white copy presentation, the colors that we had used were causing people to really lose the data that we were presenting, so we kind of changed up the shading and the colors so that for folks copying this out in black and white, they can see the detail. Page 20, we changed non-habitat again to develop for agricultural lands. On page 23, you had requested that we better clarify what we meant by restoration and enhancement. We pulled the definitions of those terms out of a tiny footnote on that same page, and we pulled that description into the text of the report. And then we added some additional text clarifying in response to Chairman Kilgore's question that the DNR and Forest Service reported acreage generally did not include lands that are harvested for timber, with a few exceptions where timber harvest is used for forest and improvement or for other restoration or enhancement purposes. You had inquired about that large base acreage from which we were calculating the changes for the council. So that is just clarifying that information. On page 26, we referenced the detail provided in the historic conservation efforts section and made more clear that the numbers in Table 9 are sums from Table 7. Again, those were just changes intended to help people understand that detail and understand that by components of activity, we mean that components are added together. On page 33 of the report, we added more explanation on the 10% increase for restoration and enhancements. Again, going back to the original presentation of the data, explaining that change over the base. We made a similar change on page 36. On page 46, this is just a small editorial change. We changed the bolded text on that page to include the Clean Water Fund. We wanted to highlight that in the future planning efforts might want to be integrated with planning efforts for the Clean Water Fund. And on page 47, we inserted the word public in front of land stewards. It was just a little edit that we got because we did not want to imply that farmers were not stewards of their own private lands. What we were discussing was recruiting them as public land stewards. Other changes than that were just some small editorial changes, paragraph spacing, period missing, and that sort of thing. So we did not include all of those types of changes in the summary. Mr. Chairman, members of the council, if you have any questions on the changes that we've made since last week or any changes that you would like to propose to the draft due to the public comments.
Judy, I'm just curious. I don't see on page 46 the reference or the bolding related to the Clean Water Fund. Can you help me? This is Appendix B, right?
Yeah. I think we reworded that with other funds.
I see.
On the third paragraph there.
Okay.
The point we were trying to make is in addition to different strategic priorities to different sections, you also might want to look at those priorities in coordination with the planning from the other funds, in particular the Clean Water.
Thank you. Okay, so questions for Ms. Drew about the changes to the framework from the last time we saw it. Les?
One of the things I would recommend is that we create a revision page so we know which final proposal revision it is, and it's going to be changing as time goes on. So let us know where we're at in the revisions in some kind of appendix.
Mr. Chairman, Member Bench, could you say what you mean again by a revision page?
Well, we've got changes in the final proposed, and the final proposed, if there's changes again to it, how do we track that?
For the next version that you read. I understand. Thank you.
Other questions for Ms. Grew about the framework as now it's in its current form? So, members, we have, in addition to the most current version, we have a single-page insert that's being recommended by staff. And I think to get this document in shape, we need to entertain a motion to include the language on the single sheet that would be inserted then on page 14 of the document. And again, this is the language that talks about protected waters and really what that term means in the context of this report. Right.
Approve the report with this change.
So let's get on the floor a motion to approve the document, and then we can amend that to include this. So we have a motion to approve the 25-year framework. And now what I'd like to do is to get it in shape as a motion to amend that document to include this single-page insert on page 14, and this is a staff recommendation.
Why can't I just move that we adopt it with the minor recommendations for change?
That's fine. All right, so you're amending your motion to approve it with the single-page insert being included in the final report. Okay. Discussion on that motion. Everyone's comfortable? Okay. Any last questions for Judy or on the framework? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Judy, before you leave, I want to say how much I, on behalf of the council, how much we sincerely appreciate the work that you have put into it, you and Peter and staff. It's been a lot of work. We know that it's spanned a lot of time, but I feel really good about the work that you did for this. I think this is going to be a very useful document to benchmark progress of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And so on behalf of the council, I want to just publicly say thanks for all your work and help in getting this to where it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the council, and I will pass that along to members of our working group as well.
Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is an update on the November forecast from Mary Robeson from Management and Budget. And recall, Mary was here last week to talk about the Outdoor Heritage Fund and indicated at that time there would be a more current update on the fund. So I think we're going to receive that information at this point. And members, this is not an action item. This is just an update. It's being passed out right now.
Plus, for this discussion, we have a salmon sheet.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Ms. Robinson.
Being passed around is the same sheet that you have in your packet as a salmon sheet, but I've written in a couple of calculations. So I just wanted to have that in front of you as well for our discussion. For the record, my name is Mary Robinson from the Budget Division at Medicine and Management and Budget. Here today to talk to you about the overall status of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, updated projected revenues and expenditures, and the implications of that for your appropriation levels for the following year. Last week when I was here to talk about what we might see today, I was referring to the treasurer's proposal, which is a fund statement put together by council staff. That is also in your packet. It's a blue sheet. That reflects the council staff's management practices for the fund. And they can speak to that if they would like to later today. But for today, I'd like to speak up of what I passed out, which is the fund statement that my office puts out for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This is part of the consolidated fund statement We put this out for every fund in the state. It's publicly available data. It's available on our website, as is the fund statements from all state funds. What I'd like to do is walk you through from biennium to biennium, starting in 2010 and then moving into fiscal year 2012. So starting with the column that's actual fiscal year 2010, again, this is the fiscal year that ended this past summer, June 30th. So what you're seeing in this column is actual data. In fiscal year 2010, the Ocean Heritage Fund received some $76 million worth of revenue from sales tax receipts and investment income. Down below that is actual expenditure. You'll notice that actual expenditure in fiscal year 10 totaled about $55 million. Now, right away, you'll notice that that is significantly less than the council appropriated for 2010. That's because some of the projects hadn't actually processed many of their project expenditures in fiscal year 10. So even though you appropriated closer to about $70 million, only $55 million was actually spent. Now, this, as a result of this, there was about $20.8 million in reserve at the end of 2010.
Excuse me, Ms. Robeson, we do have a question. Rick?
Thanks, Mike. I want to look at the word spent. So does spent mean encumbered, or does spent mean project completed and reimbursed?
That's a wonderful question. If it is encumbered, it stays in its, as an expenditure in 10. So these were unencumbered funds. An agency or encumbers a fund when there is an actual plan to spend that money, an agreement, or something that is a concrete transaction that's going to occur in the immediate future. That does not mean that they don't have long-term plans for it. It just means that it's not happening in real time, essentially.
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. Rick, follow me.
So the $55 million is encumbered.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes. Bill? Perhaps a bit more detail. The pass-through grants are encumbered when the pass-through contract is signed. The direct appropriations, some of that may be encumbered, but generally not a large amount of it. So the majority of the unspent money, if you were to go look at the records, would show up in the direct appropriations. But that would be a deceptive thing.
So then, again, lower than expected expenditure relative to appropriations results in about $20.8 million worth of reserve at the end of 10. The majority of that is appropriated and continues to be appropriated. It just hasn't actually been encumbered in that year. So when it carries forward to 2011, because those projects still have the authority to spend the money that's been appropriated to them in 2011. In addition to that carry forward into 11, the Ocho Heritage Fund will receive an estimated $82.5 million worth of receipts in 2011. That's based on today receipts and projections for the rest of the fiscal year. As I discussed when I was here last week, that's up slightly from what we had previously projected, about $1.4 million more than what we put out in February. That results in about $103 million worth of revenue for use in 2011. Now, going down to expenditure, this expenditure is current, but it is also what the project anticipates spending within fiscal year 11. And you'll notice that the total is about $91.3 million. So that is higher than what was appropriated in 11 because it reflects spending of FY11 appropriations, but also spending of that carry forward from fiscal year 2010. You'll also notice that the planned expenditure in this year actually exceeds the receipts from the same year because of that planned carry forward expenditure. But even after all of that spending from 10 and 11, the estimated reserve at the end of the year is $12.1 million. That carries forward into 2012. So that's what we're projected to carry forward into the next biennium. Now, going into the next biennium, revenue projections decreased by only $2,000 from our previous estimate, so it's basically exactly the same. So that's good news. And then you'll notice that we don't put any expenditure in for 2012. That's because that money has not yet been appropriated, and we do not assume the level that you the amount of money that you'll appropriate or who that money will be appropriated to. However, the reason that I passed out that form earlier is because I wanted to look at if you passed the draft bill as it stands with appropriations for $86,470,000, that would leave you with a reserve of about $10.5 million. Calculating that as a percentage of expenditure, you would have about 12.2% of expenditure in reserve for 2012. As I said at the December 6th meeting, I was recommending at least 5%, so you can see that that revenue greatly exceeds that mark. Yep. Mr. Chair.
Yes. Mary, the $10.5 million in anticipated reserves includes money that's already been appropriated.
Ms. Wilson?
I do not believe so, no. The only case... I believe that this carry forward of $12.1 million is actual reserve, that everything that was appropriated previously in 10 and 11 is spent in 11.
So just to follow up, so that just to clarify, you're saying that every dollar that the legislature appropriated in the first 2 years has been encumbered according to this sheet?
Right, or that this is... projected spending from agencies. So they're saying that they'll spend it all in 11. And as far as I know, the agencies, or the appropriations, do not carry forward into 12. And Mr. Beckel, you'll have to let me know if I'm wrong. But I'm not aware of any cases in which agencies have the authority to spend 10 and 11 appropriations in fiscal year 12.
Our bills provide expenditure authority for 3 fiscal years.
They do. All right, but in that case, I would expect agencies to say that they anticipate spending so much in 11 and a certain amount in 12. Therefore, you would see planned expenditure in that column in 12.
So, Mary, just on that point,
yes.
I'm looking at fiscal 10 and fiscal 11, and if what you say is true,
mm-hmm.
when you go down to total expenditures, that line, those two should add up then to our two appropriations in the Outdoor Heritage Fund. If I'm understanding you correctly.
They should.
And that seems light. I don't remember the numbers from fiscal 10 and fiscal 11.
Okay.
Well, I thought we had, maybe that is right, but I thought we were in the neighborhood of about 155 to 160 based on the appropriation. Greg or Janelle, do you recall what was appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund by the legislature in fiscal 10 and 11?
Now, there could be a scenario in which the agency or program said that they plan to spend it all in 11 and then they end up not doing that. And so therefore you could see more carry forward from 11 to 12, just like you would, just like you did from between 10 and 11. But in that case, there would actually be more carry forward to cover that expenditure in 12. Does that make sense? And so that's why this $12 million of carry forward is reserved, assuming that every dollar is spent. If it's not, that number would increase.
I think the likely difference with where we thought it was going to be is that 11 must have, from the time we made the recommendation until the current day projection of the 82.5,
mm-hmm.
that's higher than what we anticipated in terms of revenue for the fund, which leaves a bigger balance at the end of the day.
And that's what I was wondering. Ms. Robeson, can you comment? Is that
yes.
probably the likely scenario?
Yes.
That's a substantial increase.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but 78 is what... Yeah, Bill?
I believe the increase in revenue was 2.1 million.
2.1, okay.
From our planning estimate used originally.
79 was what we thought. Mm-hmm.
Jim?
So, with the reserves that we planned on, we're still, our reserve is still higher than what we...
Substantially higher.
Yes.
And I guess I asked you this last week, but in comparison to the other fund reserves, mm-hmm. substantially more held in reserve in the Outdoor Heritage Fund than, for example, the Clean Water Fund.
I'll go back to that question from last week. We have seen so far similar stories in the Clean Water and Parks and Trails accounts in terms of less expenditure in 10 than expected. They have the same revenue source, so the same revenue increases are happening. And we haven't had any problems with reserve or cash flow in those funds because they've been careful to keep enough reserve. And the expenditure has been such, like the Outdoor Heritage, that it isn't all being billed to the fund at one moment. And so cash flow has been fine, reserves have been fine. We have seen some cash flow difficulties with the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. That's based on level of reserve, but also based on cash flow. And that fund wanting to charge a lot of expenditure at the same time, which causes cash flow issues. But the bottom line for Outdoor Heritage is that if your goal is to keep a fair amount of reserves, then at this point you are doing that. I think, depending on what the council feels, but based on these numbers, I would say that you should feel comfortable with the way the fund is being managed thus far.
Conversation. You're trying to interpret your numbers, and I don't know, Greg. Maybe I think it might be helpful if you could just relay to the council what you were mentioning to Bill and I about how to interpret, kind of looking at the blue sheet and what we thought our reserve was going to be versus what it's appears to be now. Just help us better, given the history of our.
Mr. Chair, I think that the big difference is where it shows the carry forward. If you look on the blue sheet. The balance in fiscal year 2010 shows it at about $6.5 million. But that, on the blue sheet, it carries forward to 2012. Really, the balance is actually in 2011, the $6.5 million. And then, that would show a bigger balance at the bottom of 2011, which would then also carry forward to 2012. And that's kind of the difference between these on the form from finance. It basically carries forward to the next fiscal year. I mean, you've got it shown carried forward for 2 years.
Bill? And the reason it was done the way it was done on the blue sheet was a recognition that the appropriation in year one would be primarily spent in year one and year two.
so that we kept a balance against what was out and available for expenditure. It is a more conservative approach than accounting against the fund per se.
But Mr. Chair, Grant, I think the Department of Finance has the actual numbers of what will be in the fund at that time.
Correct. Mr. Chair,
yes,
if I may.
Ms. Robeson, please.
The council and council staff are welcome to make management assumptions as you will. And I can certainly appreciate wanting to make more conservative management assumptions when looking at the fund. However, carrying forward from one year to the next is standard accounting practice. So that's the way that we can look at what's in hand, not only in this fund, but in all funds in the state.
So bottom line, assuming the recommendations for appropriations from this council are in fact appropriated by the legislature, after they adjourn in May, the fund would have an unobligated balance of about $10.5 million.
That's correct.
Comments or questions? Unless, Ms. Robeson, if you had other information.
No.
Oh, you know, I had asked you this last week, and I'm going to ask you it again.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of guidelines for a reserve. We had always targeted around 5% or so, 5 to 6%. Does that still seem to be a prudent amount of cash reserves for a fund like this?
Mr. Chair, yes, I would agree that 5% of expenditure is a reasonable, between 5 and 10%. And again, using all of those assumptions, my calculated percentages for fiscal year 12 would be 12.2%, and for fiscal year 13 would be 13.5%.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Robeson about the, again, there's no action, it's just discussion and getting an update on the Outdoor Heritage Fund balance and reserves.
Well, I think the obvious question is, do you have any recommendation on how much more we should recommend?
No, sir. Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, that is completely the council's decision. Of course, if you continue to keep the bill at the appropriation level where it's at, that money is always available to you in future years.
Jim.
But I think that brings up a good question. I mean, I think we should have a process for how we're going to deal with, you know, as these real dollars come in above our estimates, how are we going to deal with them from year to year so that, I mean, they don't continue to pile up to a point where...
Well, I mean, we have two options at this point. One is we can increase the appropriations that we recommend this year, which will be quite honest, quite difficult given we have accomplishment plans that back the numbers we have. The second is looking at the agenda for next year. We're going to have a call for proposals going out in May.
Right.
And so at that point, you would certainly want to increase, I would think, the council would want to increase the amount that we would be recommending in fiscal 13 to try and draw that balance down to the 5 or 6%. But to me, those are the two options that we have at this point. Other comments or questions for Ms. Robeson? Okay, I see you now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. The good news is we aren't cutting. That's right. Members, we have the next item on our agenda is the final approval of the administrative budget. Bill, I'll turn that over to you.
You have a document in your packet that's titled LSOHC FY 2012-2013 administrative budget. It's a document that you saw last meeting. With one exception, we've actually put the FY13 column in. I think we only had FY12 column in the previous document. And that's up for approval. Major level, staff and contracts is $402,700 per fiscal year. Meeting expenses is $48,300 per fiscal year. And total office expenses is $19,000 per fiscal year for a total budget request of $470,000 per fiscal year.
We're limited to 1% of appropriations. It's not clear whether we can anticipate the FY13 appropriations or not in figuring that 1%.
Okay. So, members, we have now before you the administrative budget. Recall, this is the one item in the bill that will have appropriations for both fiscal years of biennium. I guess before a motion, well, let's get this, since this is an action item, a motion to approve the administrative budget for the council. Jim?
I would like to make a motion that we make some changes to the budget.
Sure, so let's get a motion on the table, and then we can change.
So moved.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table to approve the administrative budget as drafted. Jim, the floor is yours.
Okay, I think we've just made this budget way too lean. 1% for administrative fees, I think, is a lean fee to run an operation the size that we're dealing with here. I think we've all talked about in the past, you know, we'd like to do some, I don't know what the term you want to use is, outreach, PR, informational, so on and so forth. And I don't think there's any money here for those types of issues. We've just seen that we are, quote unquote, swimming in money here. We do have additional money. So I'd like to make the amendment that we increase the professional and technical services from $90,000 to $150,000.
Okay. So we have a motion so everyone's following, and that's in both fiscal years, Jim?
Both fiscal years.
So the motion is to increase the professional technical assistance services line item from $90,000 each year to $150,000 each year. Discussion on that motion. Darby.
Yeah, I'd like to know a little bit more about where that additional $60,000 would be useful, rather than just sort of increasing the amount.
Bill? If we were to receive an additional $60,000, we would use that for developing a professional public information plan. We've been looking around to see who might be able to do that. There are internal resources at MAD. I think what we would do is go out on a bid on this particular case. And it would be used for the purposes of that plan, which could include public relations spots on, public information spots on accomplishments of the fund. So it would be directed toward what the fund is being used for, as opposed to directed toward the activities of the council and that sort of thing.
Scott?
So it would be, if I understand correctly, it would be to disseminate information as to the successes of the appropriations that we've made, not as much marketing to try to get or to get people to either apply to the fund or, you know, and I'm referencing in my thoughts the small grants program. I mean, this wouldn't be, these funds would be used to disseminate our successes, not necessarily to encourage more people to apply for our small grants program, for example. Am I understanding that correctly?
I think that's yet to be determined. It could be done. It could be used for the small grants program as well, if you wanted it done that way.
So I guess that was a question I would have of staff, was are there any prohibitions about, you know, how we might, what we might market in terms of either the fund or the accomplishments? Is there any state statute that might restrain your grant out? Okay. I mean, I think, Scott, that's a great idea that, you know, one of the frustrations I think we're sharing is, Wes, you pointed out in previous meetings as well as others, folks don't know about what's happening with the fund and specifically the small grant program. So things we can do to increase the awareness would be a really wise investment. Wes?
Personally, I travel around the western part of the state and all the way up north on meetings with the county commissioners, the watershed districts, etc. This has pretty much been on my dime. That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But I think each individual council member needs to get out and share the information with their local areas, whether it be sportsmen's clubs, watershed districts, SWCEs. I gone the route, and it's a very open reception to our comments, and I think the more we do that on an individual basis as a council and share that information, the more effective we're going to be as far as getting information. I've had so many questions of where's the money going, and you know, the arts, the parks, the trails. Well, we have to kind of distinguish what our function is and what our responsibility is. So it's an ongoing thing that all the council members have to share with.
Scott.
And I was going to come up in a later discussion when we got to the small grants language, you know. But if we're truly going to address, I mean, right now we have a small grants program that has $600,000 left over in it because we don't have enough, we don't receive enough quality applications. And later, later in our discussion, I was going to make some recommendations that in our small grants program that we put forth some marketing effort in that, okay? And so what I'm wondering if the author of the amendment would consider a friendly amendment to that amendment that increase, if $60,000 is what it takes to share with the citizens of Minnesota what we've accomplished, okay, I perceive it will take another $50,000 or $60,000 to go out and start marketing the what's available and how these organizations go about doing so. And so if we're going to try to combine the marketing of the small grants program and the dissemination of our successes, then I think that this amount needs to go up another $60,000. $60,000 for the existing effort that Jim refers to, and $60,000 towards marketing our small grants program. And so I'd make a friendly amendment to raise that to another $60,000.
So I guess the protocol is, Jim, your amendment is on the floor, so I have no problem with that.
It would go to, instead of 150, it would go to 210.
210. Okay, so the motion now is at $210,000 additional each fiscal year for professional technical services for both marketing of outcomes as well as awareness of opportunities with the fund. Lisa.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think that this gets us into bigger discussions that I would caution us a bit. That I really appreciate the work that Chairperson Bench has done, but I think that it warrants a discussion of role of board members and expectations of board members, because I don't think that every board member is going to have that knowledge base or that comfortability or that time to be out doing that with all their county commissioners. So what is the role of board members in that, or is there another piece here that we have to address with staff? And also with the outreach and the PR, I think the other thing that we get into is how do we support these smaller groups or these groups that it's a lot of paperwork, it's a lot of hoops to jump through, and some people are real comfortable with that and they've applied for grants their entire life and different programs. Others have never done that. So how do we support, do a little hand-holding, what is the cost of that and who's responsible for it?
Yeah.
And what I'm referring to, the efforts that I'm referring to, are efforts that would happen before that action takes place. I can tell you that the vast majority of the citizens of Minnesota, if you say, do you know what the Outdoor Heritage Fund is? A large portion of those people will say, I have no idea. If you ask them, if you say, do you understand that there's a grant program available to do habitat work on public lands in your area, the vast majority of those people will say, no, I'm not aware of that. And so I understand that those organizations will need help, and I'm assuming that the grant administrator, who's ever administrating our grant program, will provide that assistance. This is to get the word out, and it might only need to be done for a year or two until the word is out, but the word right now is not out of what it is that's available and what we're doing. And I think that as long as we continue on the status quo, it will stay that way. You know, I perceive there needs to be a concerted effort, you know, and we would do that with this line item budget, you know, for a year or two to get people more aware of what's available and how they can apply for that.
Rick?
I request a roll call vote.
Okay. Roll call vote has been requested. Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author of the amendment, to start with, is that what you envision your dollars being spent on, what Commissioner Rawls talking about? about an outreach about the small grants program? Did you include that in your $60,000?
I didn't really include that in the $60,000. I was thinking more of our portion here, yes.
I agree, we're just not defining. It's just not being defined as Les is talking about. And I agree with Lisa, we don't have that much time to go around and do all those meetings, but they really still don't understand exactly where the dollars are going. They think, quite frankly, that we're involved in the arts and parks. And you have to take a little time with them and explain that. It's a very big area, a very big state to do that in. And they take these kinds of dollars. My other question would be to Bill. You were talking about some different areas of expertise or different vendors to do this. Should we have some idea what these kind of dollars would, or what kind of dollars would be you're talking about to get this job done before we just occupy, say, $120,000 additional? Is that reasonable to bring that information back before we make a?
We can, Mr. Chair. Bill. The timing is not the best. We need to get the bill together. But as soon as this bill is recommended by the council, we'll get out some dealers to see what $150,000 a year would do. Right now, I think it would rest on your expertise and familiarity with this sort of thing.
Scott? I understand my co-committee members' concerns is that, I mean, we obviously would want to know what it's spent for, but if it's in the budget, it doesn't require that it be spent. At some point, month down the road or 2 months down the road, our executive director can say, this is what we've uncovered as far as that. He can bring those issues to the council, and we can discuss that before those expenditures actually take place.
Yeah. We will do an actual request for proposals that will come this winter. It'll come in front of the council, be shaped by the council, go out for a response by various vendors, and then we'll bring that back to the council.
Bill? One other question on the sheet. There was a dollar addition pointed out to me on communications.
Right.
Is that going to be changed? We need a...
There's an addition error on the communications line in office expenses. The $1,500 should be $2,500, making the budget request $471 prior to the amendment in each fiscal year.
Did everyone catch that? So under communications, there's an additional error where it says total communications should be $2,500 instead of $1,500.
And that will have to be adjusted in the recommended bill as well.
Okay, so we do have a motion before us, members, and the motion is to increase the professional technical services by $120,000 per fiscal year, so a total of $210,000, to be used in marketing for two areas. One is accomplishments, and the second is opportunities for conservation work with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Rick?
Just so everybody is aware of what they're voting on, a time of extreme economic difficulty, not based on any factual analysis of what could be spent, but finding out that we have additional money reserved. In voting for this, the council is voting to spend tax dollars on public relations efforts rather than projects in the ground or rather than a proposal that actually came from agencies for full funding that were statutorily proposed. So I'm going to vote no. I think this is a bad precedent, and you don't even know how the money is going to be spent. You're just increasing the money.
Wes?
Under Section 2, the duties of the council officers, we've got a procedure that's pretty detailed as far as authorizing travel outside of the travel of the regular council, and I'm utilizing this on one of the particular meetings, and I think we've got a pretty good review process. Because the money is there, we don't necessarily have to expend it. But there's a communication requirement that I think all the council members have to share in. And this is going to evolve as we mature. And I think the money in reserve is is an important element to allow us to take that next step as far as communication. So it takes money to communicate, and if we don't do an effective job of communication, we don't get the word out and we become less effective. So in a time of an extreme budget, I believe we should be very judicious about the expenditures, but we have those procedures in place with our council chair and officers to, I think, to keep a close handle on it and be judicious about it. Jim?
Yeah, a question for Representative Hansen. I'm just curious. Do you know what the budget is for the LCCMR?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Cox, I think we've gone over this multiple times for not only LCCMR, but also several councils that are established in statute. And that I believe the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the Council on Native American Minnesotans, the Council, all those are operating at maybe between 100 and 200,000 total expenditure. And they're representing the entire state with authority rather than as an advisory body. With the LCCMR, they have more staff, I believe, than LSOHC, but they also are doing more due diligence and follow-up on the projects than we are. There's a much more thorough vetting and follow-up and peer review in their process than the process we're doing. I believe that we could have LCCMR down and talk about the money, but I believe it's greater than what we are asking for here. But for 2 years, we've had this comparison with LCCMR because there are a number of members who dislike LCCMR and want to compare with that. I'm saying there's a broader analysis that if you look at other administrative bodies that are being paid much less and would love to have the, you know, public relations dollars to meet the needs that they have under statute.
On that point, Jim?
Well, I just, you know, like I say, you know, we're appropriated within 1%, and we're well below our 1%, so I have a hard time understanding, Representative Hansen, why you think that this is inappropriate. I mean, we're running a very lean ship here. There's just no two ways about it.
Rick?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, this is a 12-member advisory body. It's not an end to itself. It's not an authority. It's supposed to make recommendations on appropriations, and that's it. It's not supposed to be generating publicity. It's not supposed to be, and there's no requirement. Council members are not designated for a district or an area. They're supposed to represent the entire state. And so the responsibilities of having folks say, well, I need to go do this and I need to go do that. An advisory body, and I believe, Mr. Knopf, that there are statutes that talk about agencies not promoting people and not promoting things for PR purposes themselves. Yes, outreach to get people intake, there's responsibility there, but we've given the DNR money to be doing that. So the council itself is not supposed to be out promoting and PRing. And I think you're making a mistake by doing that in these difficult times. I certainly heard it from voters. They want to cut spending. And here we are increasing.
Darby?
In general, I really do support Jim's position. Having last week visited the Kiwanis Club up in Litchfield, and I began by asking the question, how many people have heard about the Sarge Council and fund? Out of 40 people, one person said, raised his hand, and it turns out he was a childhood friend of our chair. And you know, you think about the number of people that really don't know, and I think it is an obligation at some point that we do help people understand where the heck your dollars are going to maintain or at least to build some support to the whole program. The problem I have, though, is just to lay out an amount of money without any sort of organized plan as to how we're going to do it. If somebody came in with a conservation project like that, we'd say no way. And so I'm really torn. I mean, and maybe what we ought to do is suggest to the council coming up that they indeed do this, and maybe we would set some money aside for I don't know. it's just, it's very frustrating to see in these times, and in that point, in that sense, I agree with Rick, that we would sort of put a bunch of money in when we really don't know how.
David?
Yeah, I would sort of echo Darby's comments. I'm not opposed to doing this, but I think we need a plan for what we want to accomplish and then go out and find out what it will cost us to do that. I do know the LCCMR, unlike the Heritage Council, has a full-time communications director who's tasked with getting the message out, which we're not, so it's an internal versus an external position. And I think this is, it's obviously a frustration that the world doesn't know what a great thing is going on and if there's an opportunity to plug in. But I really feel we need a full-blown plan for how we're going to do that, not money that will search for a plan.
Lisa?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I struggle, too, because of being responsible to the taxpayers. This is also something that taxpayers voted on and that's affecting taxpayers every day. So I would be more comfortable supporting this. We need to do something, because if we don't, I believe that only those that know about it are coming to the table requesting the funds. Therefore, we're doing a disservice to the taxpayers not marketing this. And I, too, everyone I talk to was Sarah Sam's Council, what's that, you know? So people don't know about it. I don't believe it's the responsibility of board members to go to their area and educate them. So I think we need a plan, and I would like to suggest that prior to just allocating funds, feels more like a shot in the dark. But we do need something. We need something going forward.
Wes?
As a council member, I do not relinquish my responsibility as a citizen of the state of Minnesota, a taxpayer, and a voter. The council to go out and strictly promote a particular project or element, I think, is against the wishes of the council and against the general direction of the council. But I think as a citizen, I'm still going to continue that role. I'm still going to interface with our local groups, our sportsmen's clubs, our county commissioners, and as a passion to what the voters voted for and how this money is being spent. We are running a very lean, mean ship, and I agree we need to define this, and I think the procedures are already in place of how to define this and how to judiciously spend this money. I don't recommend we go out and spend $100,000 on advertising or promotion, but we have to also once in a while stand on the soapbox and tell what's going on out there and what's going on in here.
Scott?
I think the one big difference between my train of thought and some other of my co-committee members is that funds in the budget are not spent funds. If we don't allocate the funds to this budget, nothing is going to happen again for another year, okay? Any plan will be approved by the sitting council at the time, okay? So if the funds are not put in the budget, nothing will happen again for another year. And we'll be into our fourth round of recommendations with 75% of the people not knowing what the Outdoor Heritage Fund is. So the fact that we put the money in the budget and let the current sitting council approve that plan, I think is prudent. Because if it's not there, it won't happen, and you'll have another year lag. So please just remember that if it's in the budget, doesn't mean it's spent. It's allocated if a proper plan can be identified.
Further comment, Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David, you said there was a full-time public relations on LCCMR.
I think it's full-time, but it's a communications director.
That's what they do. They push their, for no other term, push their program for all of the state of Minnesota for that particular program. Those dollars that actual figure of $27-29 million a year. Is that true? $22 million LCCMY, something like that. And I don't know that we should compare the difference because they've been there a while, but what is the administrative cost there versus our administrative cost? Does anybody know? Bill?
Ms. Scheffler, would you be interested in coming down and representing the commission? Please.
Mr. Chair, what? Bill, when she's on her way down, maybe to clarify again, would this be one time setup $10 we're talking about? Just getting an initial public relations program together, and then the cost of that would then go down from there? Or is this something ongoing you're talking about, Scott? I guess I. Scott?
Well, it has a lot to do with the success of the program. I mean, I know, for example, that in Minnesota, they came out with a walleye stamp this year. And it was a stamp that you could buy, you weren't required to buy it, and it raised funds for fisheries issues. And it was a very successful program. You know, and it let, I mean, people bought the stamp. It was promoted in outdoor medias, you know, and that's what I would perceive this to be. If the program is successful, it certainly might get smaller over time. But, I mean, we have a responsibility initially, I believe, you know, and this is not like we're making a recommendation to tap us at our 1% budget. This is an allocation to try to do better than we've done before. The future of that, in my estimation, is based on a year-to-year line item in that budget if the sitting councils continue to think it's important.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning.
Good morning.
And I don't know if you needed the question repeated or not.
Well, for the record, I'm Shelley Treffler with the LCCMR, and I believe you're interested in knowing about our communications position.
Two things. One is the communications position. I heard Senator Engelbertson inquiring about the administrative budget as percentage of the total appropriation made through the Environmental Trust Fund.
You'll need to forgive me. I do not have our administrative budget committed to memory, and I don't have a copy of it with me. So I would request, if you want the specific information, that I be able to go back to the office to get that information. By our governing statutes, we are allowed to use up to 4% for administrative purposes. We use nowhere near that. It's closer to 2%. I'm not sure that looking at an absolute percent comparison, it's all that helpful just due to the size of the funds. We do have approximately $25 million available each year versus the amount that's available through the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So doing the math, that's not necessarily a good comparison. But as I said, I would be happy to get a copy of our administrative budget. I just don't have that information with me.
Senator Engelbert, to that point, can you tell me what the public relations person does? Just give us a quick overview of what they do for them. And I should know more about this because I'm soon going to be on that particular committee. However, it's going to be a learning process, if you can imagine to me. But can you give me a little overview of that?
Our communications director is... While he's a full-time employee, his duties are not full-time for communication director, so that portion of his responsibility is less than full-time. He does a variety of things, from writing press releases to helping promote the RFP that we put out, working with folks that receive trust fund appropriations and helping them talk about their projects and get the word out about what they're doing and what they have accomplished, working kind of more broadly on helping people understand what the trust fund is being used for and what it has accomplished, working with different legislative members who have questions, helping them understand what's going on in their districts and their part of the state. And there's probably a number of things that he does that I'm not even aware of.
How many open projects do LCC MAR staff manage?
Our most recent count is approximately 250.
Any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry. 250 ongoing, 250 per year?
250 ongoing. So that includes projects that may have been appropriated. Well, it does include projects that have been previously appropriated. Many of our projects are 2 or 3 years in length. So with annual appropriations, it's a cumulative number.
Darby?
Yeah, just a really quick question following up on Phil's. Does this person that we've been talking about do public talks? I mean, do they go out and visit with Kiwanis and so forth along the line, or is it more paper articles and things like that? Just give me a sense of
that. I think if we received a request to come and speak to people, we would. We generally we don't receive that many of those requests. So his job is probably more focused, you know, office space rather than going out and being a public face. But that doesn't mean that as a staff we don't go out and talk to people when we're asked.
Yeah, there's quite a difference between when you're asked as opposed to trying to develop the relationships.
Well, just one more follow-up, if I could. So then, can you give me an idea of how you feel about the outreach of the LCC MAR statewide? Do you think everybody in the state, all corners of the state, are familiar with you and know you've been going for a while?
That's a very challenging question to answer. I think if you ask the question, do people across the state know the term Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund? I'm guessing not. If you say projects that have been supported by proceeds from the lottery, then I think that there's a higher level of recognition.
Any other? Bill?
You might explain to the council the role of the lottery in public relations projects.
The Minnesota State Lottery does have, I'm sure all of you are aware of, does have extensive public relation capability and efforts, and they do regularly talk about the projects or the results of projects that have been supported from the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund.
Any further questions or in the shuffle?
Just one final comment. It kind of boils down to, is it more efficient to do a centralized control and distribution of that information? It's kind of the basic disagreement between government and the private sector. The private sector doesn't trust government. The government doesn't trust the private sector to do the job. When we continue to increase the size of the centralized government, state and federal, and if a responsibility to share this information out in the entire state of Minnesota is allocated to individual members throughout the state, wouldn't it seem to be a little bit more efficient to decrease travel time, overnight lodging, things like that? And when you're dealing with a resident of the general area, it seems like it's more of a credible exchange of information. And sure, sometimes we take some really tough questions out there, but that's part of the responsibility also. And I just feel that it eventually becomes a position and a job of the council to inform and educate. How far we go with that, that's another question.
Darby?
Yeah, there's only one big concern that I have. Wes, you and I are retired. That's a whole different ballgame than the folks who...
You're retired.
85. I'm not retired either, really, but another way to say
that. Our definition of half days is 12 hours a day.
Brian. Mr. Chairman, I just hope that the fellow council members will be open to increasing some appropriations, and we do have some money to work with, not just for administrative things, but also for some project budgets here later on. So that the only increase in our recommendations that happens today isn't just for administrative things, but also some on-the-ground stuff.
And members, I do want to call your attention to the fact that we do have $150,000 in our administrative budget that's carried forward, that's available to us now. So I just want you to keep that in mind. That is money that has been appropriated for administrative budget in past years that has not been spent or allocated. So that money is available right now, so that council could, at the, you know, the staff at the direction of the council could begin that process. We would not have to wait until this money is appropriated to begin that effort. Remember, we do have a motion on the floor.
Bill, just one more question, if I could, to clarify the percentage. And are we still with these type of expenditures that are on the floor? Or in made in the form of amendments here. Are we still under the 1%?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's 1% of appropriations.
Close to about a half.
Well, you've got to add the two fiscal years together, and I don't know how you interpret the term appropriations, because the way we do our bills and are asked to do the bill on an annual basis, there's another appropriations coming up in the period that this administrative money represents. So I'm quite frankly at a loss to figure out exactly how to interpret that 1%. Mr. Nutt or Council, do you have any?
Greg, Janelle, any advice or interpretation of that 1%?
Oh, all right.
Chair and members. Bill, it should be 1% of the amount appropriated. I understand that you're talking about two fiscal years for administration and only one fiscal year for the total amount appropriated, so that this would probably be slightly over the, we're pretty close anyways, slightly over the 1%. But it really is the amount appropriated. I mean, the statute provides a framework. But if the legislature decides to appropriate this money, it's not in violation of that statute. It's just the specific law can override the general anyways. But they will be appropriating money in the next fiscal year that would then, so this would be quite a bit less than the 1%. I don't think I'd get too caught up in that interpretation. I think you're okay with this. I think you're going to be well within the 1%. For the amount appropriated in that fiscal year, even though you're asking us if you're appropriate for the second year amount this year, I don't think that that's going to be an issue.
To that point, Bill, the whole reason I raised that question is that I certainly agree with Representative Hansen's feelings on that. You know, we're certainly in budget strained times here, and Senator Fogle will agree that any expenditures going on from this day forward are going to be under a lot of scrutiny. However, it seems that we're in an emergent state here, if you will, with this committee, that we're still just getting our feet wet, and we're, I don't think anybody at this table is going to argue the fact that we're just not getting our, you know, doing the proper outreach. I can echo what Les says. Wherever I go, I'm constantly explaining the differences between the committees, and maybe that's going to be ongoing. I think you're right. If you don't talk about gambling, they don't know what the dollars are talking about when you come to LCCMR. So there's going to be a certain amount of that you're just not going to get, but we really, really don't have that outreach there. And if we're still running right around at 1%, I think it's certainly still a pretty good sell for me.
Further discussion on the motion? Lisa.
Could you repeat the motion, please? Especially the figure we're talking about.
Bill, you could just.
The motion is to increase the professional technical services in each fiscal year from $90,000 to $210,000.
Further discussion on the motion?
Yeah, of course.
$90,000 to $210,000. 10 per year.
Per year. $120,000 increase per year. And a roll call vote has been requested. Any further discussion on the motion? If not, Sandy, if you could take the roll, please.
Okay, Lester Bench?
Yes.
Ryan Bronson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Sarah Fulby?
Yes.
Representative Hanson?
No.
David Hartwell?
No.
Senator Ingram?
Yes.
Mike Kilbar, or Darby Nelson?
No.
Scott Rall?
Yes.
Chair Kilgore?
No.
6-4.
Motion is adopted. Okay, so we have now before us an amended budget, including the addition error. So now that should be, help me out, Bill. We've got a an administrative budget now of $591,000 per fiscal year. So members, just $591,000 per fiscal year for administrative budget. Further discussion on the motion to approve the administrative budget. Rick?
Request a roll call vote.
Okay, roll call vote has been requested. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Roll call vote has been requested. Sandy?
Okay, Lester Bench.
Supporting on the budget.
On the budget? Oh,
yes.
Ryan Bronson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Senator Colby?
Yes.
Representative Hancock?
No.
David Hartwell?
Yes.
Senator
Hanson?
Yes.
Darby Nelson?
Yes.
Scott Rall?
Yes.
Chair Kilgore?
Yes.
9-1.
So the motion is adopted. Okay. Members, the last item, the second to last item on our agenda, our last action item, is the approval of the appropriations bill for fiscal year 12. So, with that, Bill, would you help us guide us through the bill and any changes that were made since last week?
I'm going to ask Ms. Cook to take us through the changes in the bill.
This is Chair Bill. At the last week's meeting, I walked you through the language of the bill, and so today what I will do is I will just inform you of the changes that were made per the council's request. At our last meeting last week. One of the items that the council voted on to remove language from the appropriations that required the Commissioner of Natural Resources approval for land acquisition, and those have been removed wholesale from the bill. So if you look at Section 2, Subdivision 2, Prairies 2A, this applies to the Wildlife Management Area, Scientific and Natural Area, and Prairie Bank Easement Acquisition Phase 3 Program. If you look on page 2 of your bill, you will see that that language does not apply to the Department of Natural Resources, but we did require an addition to the new road. What we did require was that the accomplishment plan include an easement and monitoring enforcement plan to be attached and included in the accomplishment plan for the program and subject to subdivision 15, which we will get to further in the bill.
If I may, the major changes in subdivision 2A are the deletion of the word management and monitoring. Management and enforcement because of some confusion about whether or not that would allow the money to be used for burns and things of that sort, and then a reference to subdivision 15.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. 2B, there are no changes. 2C, no sort of buffers for wildlife and water. The word habitat was inserted in the first sentence to acquire permanent conservation easements to enhance habitat by expanding riparian wildlife buffers on private land. Clarity and intent. Again, we deleted the word management in reference to the easement enforcement plan. We also included the appropriation to be subject to subdivision 15. And again, the removal of the word management from the phrase. The next appropriation, 2D, Northern Tall Grass Prairie. We deleted the requirements that the money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for human acquisition may be used to establish a monitoring and management enforcement fund approved in a competent plan, and also the requirement that the annual financial reports on the fund be established and put in the expenditures of the fund.
So can you just explain, Heather, why that has been deleted?
That was deleted because this is a program for which land was allotted to federal ownership, and they also did not request any easement stewardship funds in their proposal. 2E is the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project. There was an insertion of language per the direction of the council chair, that is, acquisitions, restorations, and enhancements must be within the two pilot focus areas contained in the accomplishment plan, laws of Minnesota 2010, Chapter 261, Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 2F. This is a discussion that was held in August at a council meeting regarding the proposal from the Nature Conservancy to extend the phase 2 of the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project.
I don't remember that discussion about these two pilot focus areas. I don't understand why we've made that change. I mean, didn't they come in with three? Was it three or five?
Chair Kilgore, Mr. Cox, the proposal asked to expand the two pilot areas to two additional pilot areas for a total of four.
Why are we making that change to two pilot focus areas?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, my understanding is that in reviewing the discussions at the previous meetings, there was some concern about the status of the pilot areas and what the results had been. So prior to extending it to two additional focus areas, there was some desire on part of the council members to see what the results had been from those management activities on the two initial pilot areas.
So have we designated what pilot areas that they have to use, or?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, yes, that is indicated in the language I just read to you.
So, Jim, just to clarify, these would be the initial two pilot areas that TNC is working in currently.
Mr. Chair, yes, those two areas described in their appropriation of last year, described in Chapter 261, Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 2F.
Okay, so I'm really confused. So there's no additional areas that they're working on. Everything is going to be concentrated on the two previous. I don't understand. That's not the project that I voted on. I mean, my vote was because they're going to expand those focus areas, moving them some down to the southwest part of the state. And I don't remember any discussion on us limiting them to these two focus areas.
Mr. Chair, Bill, the discussion took place on the 24th of August. Participants in the discussion in general were Mr. Rawl, Mr. Inger, Chair Kilgore, and Darby Nelson. A particular interest with regard to whether or not they ought to expand, that was primarily led by Chair Kilgore. There was some discussion by Councilmember Rawl about whether or not they ought to expand. Subsequently, that was not moved in the adoption of the language on the 16th, 15th of September. The chair asked us to put this before you for discussion.
Well, that's not how I remember the discussion. If I remember that they were bringing in three additional sites for the two they're already, we'd already appropriated money to the last couple of years, and there was a talk of limiting that from the three down to an additional two. But this is just now we're just putting more money back to where we'd already given them money to. There's no expansion of the project whatsoever.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I believe Mr. Cox is correct.
So members, let's footnote that, because this is an addition, and this has not been an action item of the council. It was a direction that I gave to staff after the discussion we had in August, with this sentiment that instead of being they be pilots, that instead of expanding out into several additional project areas, to put more of those resources into the initial pilot areas. But that's something I asked staff to put it in here so that we can talk about it, because that was certainly the direction that we were heading in August, but we never took a formal motion on it. So flag that, and someone.
Hello.
Good morning.
Bob Gunther, good morning.
Representative Gunther, good morning. We are just going through the appropriations bill, so welcome.
Thank you.
So members, flag that, and when we get through with the bill, we can certainly entertain motions to change that. I just wanted to make council members aware that that was the direction we were heading in August. Heather?
Next appropriation is 2F, again, River Headwaters, Habitat Complex. Again, the deletion of the Commission of Natural Resources requirement has been deleted from that item. 2G, Facility and Wildlife Management Area Program. The phrase to be added is deleted for clarity purposes. 2H, Accelerating the Waterfowl Production Area Program. Again, the Commissioner's requirement to approve the acquisitions already has been deleted. 2I, the Green Corridor Legacy Program. There was clarity language removed and inserted the appropriate preposition for that appropriation. Subdivision 3, Forest, Minnesota Forest for the Future. Again, similar language changes as we've seen earlier. The word management has been deleted in reference to the easement monitoring and enforcement plan. Also, the requirement that the appropriation is subject to subdivision 15. Again, we'll review when we get to that portion of the document. 3B is a Shell Lake program, strengthening critical of Minnesota Headwaters habitat. The commissioner's requirement to include the writing has been deleted. 3C, the Accelerated Forest Habitat Enhancement Program. No changes to language since last week. 3D, Northeastern Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Habitat Partnership, Phase 2. Again, a prepositional phrase change in that item. And 3E, Lower Mississippi River Habitat Partnership Program. We added directional language pursuant to Minnesota Statutes 86A.05 to indicate the management unit that these parcels would be added to. 3F, Protect Key Forest Habitat Lands in Cass County. There have been no changes to that language. 3G, the State Forest Acquisition. As you remember, we brought forward last week a new appropriation taken from the earlier 2A to distinguish State Forest from the other management areas. We also indicated that there would be 1 acre of permanent management access easement in this proposal, so it's not a conservation easement. Subdivision 4, Wetlands, the Reinvesting Minnesota Wetland Reserve Acquisition and Restoration Program Partnership. Once again, language changes in reference to easement monitoring plan. Management has been removed from that language, as well as a requirement that this appropriation is subject to Subdivision 15. There's also one other change to that language. We asked for a description of the monitoring activities associated with the rim constraints. 4B, Accelerated Shell Lakes Wetlands and Restoration Enhancement Program. There are no changes to that language. And once again, on 4C, the Shallow Lake Shoreland Protection Wild Rights Program, the changes in language regarding easement monitoring and also subject to Subdivision 15. Subdivision 5, Habitat, Accelerated Aquatic Management Area Habitat, Phase 3, changes to the language regarding easement monitoring, removal of management from that requirement, and also subject to Subdivision 15. No changes to cold water fish enhancement program, appropriation 5B. And in 5C, the land addition to the Janet Johnson Memorial Wildlife Management Area, the commissioner's approval is no longer necessary for that acquisition. 5G, the Metro Big Rivers Habitat Program Phase 2. There have been some changes to this language resulting from a change in proposal from Metro Big Rivers. As you remember from our previous discussions, there was money to be used for restoration of land that was not purchased with outdoor heritage funds. So there's some concern about how that land would be managed into the future. Metro Big Rivers has withdrawn those two parcels, so that language is no longer necessary, and that has been removed. And you see that through the strikeout language under this appropriation. Again, we have included the requirements for subject to Subdivision 15 and removal of the management language from the easement stewardship.
So, this is in reaction to the language that we drafted for the council to control spending money on management money on easements where there isn't management access, and actually making that management access subject to the reversionary clause. And the proposers just didn't feel that was some of the way that they wanted to go. So they removed those parcels and we removed the language.
Mr. Chair, and also recognize too that the commissioner is permission is our certification is no longer necessary for the proposed land acquisition. 5E, protecting sensitive shorelands in north central Minnesota. Again, the changes to the management language and the use of monitoring and enforcement funds. It is subject to Subdivision 15, and we also include an article for clarity and adding the word "the" to Department of Natural Resources. 5F, restoring native habitat and water quality. We had some discussion at the last week's meeting regarding the ultimate disposition of this land, and Member Rawl had indicated that the proposers had intended for the lands to be transferred or to an aquatic management area. Staff subsequently spoke with the proposers from the Watershed District, and yes, indeed, this is their intent, so we included the language to that intent. Thank you very much, Member Rawl.
Kudos to Councillor Rawl.
So that language has been added as well. And once again, the Commissioner of Natural Resources no longer must approve in writing each proposed acquisition. In 5G, Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partner Grant Program, there have been several changes to the language here. New language has been inserted and is shown underlined. Grants shall not be made for activities required to fulfill the duties of the owners of land subject to conservation easements. This is at the suggestion of members last meeting.
Scott.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just, if a change is recommended in this section of the language, would now be the appropriate time to do that, or would we just flag it for a conversation at the end?
Yeah, but we're going to get a motion on the table to approve this, and then we'll take amendments, and it will be at that time.
Very good. Yep. Thank you.
Continue, please.
Chair, again, we have struck the language. The Commissioner of Natural Resources must agree in writing to the proposed acquisition. There was a discussion at the last meeting regarding the way in which the criteria was weighted in evaluating proposals, and there was some reordering. The phrase "in order of precedence" was removed, so they were not necessarily in order of importance. We struck the term "degree of collaboration" and inserted that later in that phrase. You see on page 13, it is put at the end of those suggested criteria. And that was the, those are all the changes for that subdivision. Subdivision 6, administration for contract management, there's no changes there. 6B, given actions of council, those numbers will be changed to reflect the correct amount, which I believe to be 1.182 million dollars for total appropriation. About 591 each year, so those numbers will change. 6C, no changes to that language. Subdivision 7, the availability of appropriations, no changes. Subdivision 8, accomplishment plan, there have been no changes to that language. Subdivision 9, project requirements, no changes to that language. Subdivision 10 and Subdivision 11, there are no changes to those two requirements, nor to Subdivision 12, accessibility, or Subdivision 13, land acquisition requirements. Subdivision 14 remains the same, real property interest report, and then a new Subdivision 15 has been inserted, entitled easement monitoring and enforcement requirements. Money from an easement monitoring and enforcement fund may only be spent on activities included in an easement monitoring and enforcement plan in the accomplishment plan. Holders of easement monitoring and enforcement funds must provide an annual financial report 180 days after the close of the entity's fiscal year. Money and interest earned shall be kept in a separate account and dedicated to easement monitoring and enforcement of conservation easements acquired with appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The state retains a common interest in state monies deposited in easement monitoring and enforcement funds and interest thereon. And if you remember, several of the appropriations I discussed with, several minutes ago include adherence to this new subdivision.
Which were built, Mr. Chair. The ones that have the reference to this particular subdivision are the ones that are acquiring easements and have stewardship money in their budget.
Thank you.
As a consequence of the insertion of this subdivision 15, there is a new subdivision. The former subdivision 15 has now become subdivision 16, which is successor organization. Section 3, laws of 29, chapter 172, article 1, section 2 is amended to read. There has been language inserted there dealing with conservation easement stewardship funds that are directly applicable to that appropriation. Reads, up to $750,000 in fiscal year 2011 may be deposited in an account and used for long-term monitoring and enforcement of the easements acquired. Money and interest earned shall be kept in a separate account and dedicated to monitoring and enforcement of permanent working force easements acquired with appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Further down in that appropriation, language has been stricken that reads, the fiscal year 2011 appropriation is available only for acquisitions that by August 15, 2009 are 1. Subject to a binding agreement with the commissioner, and 2. Matched by at least $9 million in private donations. 97A.056 is amended to read with new language that I believe you had last, again, at the last meeting. The public members shall serve 4-year terms. The plan of legislative members shall serve the pleasure of the appointing authority. Public legislative members continue to serve until their successors are appointed. Public members shall be initially appointed according to the following schedule of terms. So that language was available to you last week, and there have been no subsequent changes to that, as well as the deletion of number 7, 2 members of the Senate appointed by the Senate Subcommittee on Committees, Public Committee under Rules Administration for a term ending the first Monday in January 2013, and 2 members of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker of the House for a term ending the first Monday in January 2013. 97A.056 was also amended to be proposed to amend to include a definition section, which was also made available to council members.
Very good. So, members, that is the appropriation bill with the changes that have been made since last week. Lisa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Ms. Cook. I don't know the appropriate timing of this, but I would like to, being on the prevailing side of the last vote with regard to the administrative budget, I would like to vote,
change my vote or however appropriate that it is.
So you're requesting to reconsideration of the motion.
Yes, reconsideration of the motion.
So help us out, staff, on that.
Mr. Chair, what Senator Bogey would like to do is reconsider the motion whereby the extra $150,000 per year was added to that. So that's the motion. So right now you're voting just to bring, vote yes brings the motion back in front of you.
Okay, so we're actually, so the first motion is whether to reconsider that motion. Okay, and that is not a debatable motion. Okay, so we have a motion to reconsider the motion to appropriate an additional $120,000 per year in the administrative budget for outreach. Okay. Since we do have Representative Gunther on the phone, that does require a roll call vote. So, Sandy, if you could do that. Again, this is just to reconsider. This is not the actual vote.
Les?
No.
Ryan Johnson.
No.
Jim Cox.
No.
Senator Bogey.
Yes.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Anderson.
No.
Darby Nelson.
Yes.
Scott Rall.
No.
Six to four.
And
Chair Kilgore.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry.
Okay. Six to five.
Yeah. So the motion does prevail. Okay. So now we are reconsidering that. No. The motion doesn't prevail. I'm sorry. 5-6. The motion does not prevail. I'm sorry. So there were 5 yeses and 6 noes. The motion does not prevail. My fault. Okay, members, so we have before us the appropriations bill and as drafted, and we need a motion on the table just to get the discussion going.
So moved.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve the recommendations on the fiscal 12 appropriations bill as drafted. So, start out, Ryan.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend on page 8, section 4B. Appropriation changes from $936,000 to
$1,176,000. Ryan, restate, please.
It's on page 8, 4B, accelerated shallow lakes and wetlands. Increase the appropriation to $1,176,000. And amend the language at the end, including pre-design and design for Marsh Lake restoration.
We're getting that down, and then Bill will restate the motion.
Councilor Bronson moves to amend on page 8 of the bill, item 4B. The amount should be amended upward to $1,176,000, and the language should be amended as follows. For the period, insert and pre-design and design for Marsh Lake restoration.
Okay. So that we have that motion on the table. Brian, do you wish to speak to that motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is a project that the DNR brought to us as a standalone. It was it didn't make the final cut, but it's a shallow lake. I think we're all familiar with it. I think it's a very important project to the upper Minnesota and lower Red River Valley restorations that we're working on for waterfall migrations. The increased appropriation is a very similar amount to what we just increased our administrative budget by. In fact, it's the exact same number. So that's why the numbers are what they are.
Darby?
Just a comment. I'm just wondering, rather than sort of just picking and choosing and adding and so forth, I feel a whole lot more comfortable. If we're going to get into that game, I'm not sure that all excited about that because we've gone through this and we spent a lot of time evaluating, questioning proposals and so forth. If we're going to do it, I'd like to know can we set some sort of limit or amount? Can we know what we're dealing with in terms of the additions to the to these bills? I assume that's where we're at.
So on that point, Bill, just related to the comments regarding the carried forward, in round numbers and talking to Bill, we probably are over by approximately $5 million over what our target might be.
We might ask Ms. Robinson.
Yeah. And Ms. Robinson still in the audience? Yes. Oh, she is. Great. Good morning again. And did you hear the question?
I believe the question relates to setting a target amount for the overall bill in light of increased resources to the fund. Well, I would have to do some quick calculations here, but you would want, if your target was 5%, is that,
yes.
I'm sorry, I need to understand.
Mr. Chair. Yes. If our target were 5%, what would be the amount?
Right. So you would want $1,551,000 to be 5%. Permission to take this?
Yes, we're not asking you to do that math on the fly. But if you could just.
But it'd be roughly times.
We had ballparked it around $5 million, but that was just a seat-of-the-pants guess, so if you could give us a little bit of...
Yeah, if I could, I'll do this calculation. And
that would be great. So while Ms. Robeson is doing that calculation, Les, on the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ryan, is this project on Marsh Lake, is this a major expenditure for the moist soil management on Marsh Lake? How much of this?
It's a pre-design and designed for the shallow lake project, not moist soil. That's why I put it in this section of the bill. It's related to the shallow lakes program.
Is Marsh Lake on the Boyden Sioux or off Traverse? I don't recall the location.
It's downstream from Traverse.
So the end of Boyden Sioux.
This is the shallow lake in the Black Lapar in the management area. Okay, Jim.
Didn't they need like $300,000 to do this?
They needed $300,000 for that project alone. I'm increasing this appropriation by $240,000, but I'm not specifying that only $240,000 could be spent on the Marsh Lake project.
So in other words, well, I guess we'd have to come out with the accomplishment plan, but it could be that other projects are going to be trimmed back in order for Marsh Lake to be completed in the pre-engineering and the engineering.
We'll need an amended accomplishment plan to accomplish this.
Yeah, remember, that's a good point, that anytime we amend any of these appropriations, we will have to go back to the proposers and ask for an amended accomplishment plan to come back and then to be approved by this council. So just keep that in mind if we do make changes to the appropriation amounts. Les?
Ryan, I don't have any problem with the project. I have more problem with the procedure on it this time of adding this after the review has been done. I don't have any problems with the project, but at the procedural time that this is occurring, I'd have some problems with that.
Scott?
You know, and I echo that a little bit. It might vary. I mean, we looked at it. And back when we were evaluating projects, we had the time to look at it, we had the time to look it over and determine merit or no merit. You know, I can tell you that this particular project does not ring, great detail of this project does not ring in my mind at this point, you know, and so it's a little difficult, you know, when I don't have the details of that project. So I just hope that goes.
And members, I would echo that too, that I don't have the book, Jim, I see brought the proposal. And it's going to take a bit for me to recall if there's a particular amendment about what that would buy us, what that project was, particularly ones that have multiple activities within a proposal. So. Rick?
Like, I would encourage opposition to the amendment just because I think if we open this up, we make a case about things being science-based and we've gone through the detail. And, I think on the broader schedule, I mean, there's things I'd like to add more money to, I think it's probably a wrong precedent on this specific one. I think we had, there were some questions about the appropriateness of design pre-design in terms of the project, and Mr. Knapp could help us with that if we wanted to. I think we talked about that then, about the ability to spend the money on design pre-design.
Any further comments on, we do have a motion then to increase Project 4B on page 8 by $140,000. Further discussion
Mr.
on...
Mr. Chair.
Understood. Sorry, $240,000, I'm sorry. Yes, Ryan.
Well, this is a project we have reviewed. Both Trust Unlimited and DNR have been involved in the project. It's certainly much more science-based than a $240,000 appropriation for some potential marketing plan that none of us know what it is. This is much more specific. It's an on-the-ground project. We know the benefits that will come from restoring these shallow lakes in this particular part of the state, so critical to our flyway migration routes for waterfowl and shorebirds and a whole number of species. So I would encourage members to support this amendment so that we don't, the only appropriation that we increase today isn't for administrative budgets, but we use them on the ground. Good stuff, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did someone say along the line here, Mr. Burnson, would you help me, that the DNR was involved in this proposal along with Ducks Unlimited? Mm-hmm. If they're here, can they maybe step down and give us
sure.
a little idea?
Are there a representative from DU or the DNR who can speak to the proposal? And Mary, while they're coming down, how's the calculator work?
Well, I'm wondering how to best answer your question, because what I did was take the estimated reserve in 12, which was 10.5 million, and say, well, what is that 5% of? If your target was to make that 5% of appropriations, and it was so large that I had to double check multiple times, but the number would be 221,020,000. But that is correct. Right now, that number is that 10.5 million is about 12% of appropriation. So it is quite a large increase. It would more than double your appropriations. But also, I don't know if that's logical, considering that looking at the fund, you have about $97,000 worth of resources estimated in 12. So, I'm not exactly sure how to answer the question. Getting to this 10 million to 5% would be a huge increase.
Okay, we'll give you more time to keep working the numbers
right.
while we get some comments. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So did you hear the question? It's regarding the Marsh Lake pre-design and design work.
Was there a specific question, again, for the record, Brent Wilson, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources?
I think just a bit more background about what this money would be used for.
What I can tell you, it's the $300,000 that was proposed initially, and again, there wasn't a development plan written because it didn't make it that far, but the $300,000 that was proposed initially was for final design work on the Marsh Lake project, which is DNR's component of Corps of Engineers. There's approximately $900,000 in leverage from the Corps that is the Corps' portion of the project. And so this is for final design only on the dam modification, and there's a restoration, I believe, of the Pontotera River, the original outlet of the Pontotera River to Black Park. But if you have more specific questions about the project site, I believe Steve can answer those.
Are there any other questions about that project? It's coming back to me a bit now. Derby?
Yeah, I'm going to speak against the amendment. I think, again, procedurally, I don't think this is the kind of ballgame you want to get into. Everybody here, I suspect, certainly I have a number of projects I would love to put more money in. But we did an awful lot of work on the accomplishment plans, on the listening to the proposal, answer the questions, and so forth.
And I would really hate to see us establishing anything near to a sort of a precedent that at the last moment we kind of change a whole bunch of things. I'm not sure how fair it is to pick out maybe one or two and then not, you know, sort of open the whole ballgame up to everyone to see who's got projects that they think deserve more money. So I would urge that we not support this.
Further discussion on the motion.
May I amend my motion? Delete pre-design and just put design, since we've been performed pre-design work is done.
Bill, do you want to restate the amended motion?
Amend the amount of item 4B on page 8 to $1,176,000, an increase of $240,000. And before the period, insert and design for Marsh Lake.
Okay. Further discussion on the amended motion. Okay, hearing none. Roll call vote, Sandy.
Okay, Lester Bench.
No, bring the project back next year.
Ryan Bronson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
No.
Senator Holt.
No.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Hanson.
No.
Dave Hartwell.
No.
Senator Ingridson.
Yes.
Darby Nelson.
No.
Scott Wall.
No.
Chair Kilmer.
No.
Two yes, nine no.
Okay, so the motion is not adopted. Okay. Okay, so members, we have an amendment before us, or we have a bill before us with a motion. Further discussion. Scott.
I have an amendment not to change an appropriation amount, but to change some administrative dollar amounts within the appropriation. I've had numerous contacts with our current grant administrator of our small grants program. That program went from $4 million to $5.2 million, and the administrative dollars for personnel remained the same. And my amendment would leave personnel dollars the same, but it would allow $40,000 of the appropriation to be used for other administrative issues, not personnel, which would then reinstate the outstate meetings that are held for promoting the small grants program. I believe that the council, or at least the majority of the council members, mirror my frustration with our current setup of our small grants program. But I don't want next year to be, well, you know, we didn't do our outreach and that's why we weren't successful. So my motion is to amend the administrative budget for the small grants program, increasing not personnel but overall administration by $40,000. Appropriation stays the same, but of the appropriation, $40,000 gets added to the administration of the small grants program, with the hope that that will give our current administrator the very best chance of delivering a product that we will all be very proud of next year.
Okay, so Bill, can you help understand what specifically we would be changing in the bill?
On the line that begins with the dollar sign 279.
Now this is on page 12, members.
Yes, page 12, item 5G. That sentence would now read $279,000. This appropriation may be spent for strike administrative and insert personnel costs and $40,000 for other administrative costs.
So could you so once you get that written down, could you restate that again?
The line beginning with, or the sentence beginning with $279,000 is amended to read, $279,000 of this appropriation may be spent for strike administrative insert personnel costs and $40,000 for other administrative costs. More or less.
And maybe up to $40,000, would that be a friendly amendment? Up to? Okay. So we have that motion before us, members. Further discussion on that motion? Hearing none.
Well, I'm curious to see how the DNR feels about it since it's appropriated to them.
Please, Mr. Myers.
Mr. Chair, quickly, if I could.
Yes, please.
First of all, I apologize for my math and the hot seat-induced panic. Secondly, if you increase the appropriations by $5.5 million, that would increase your total appropriations to about $92.1 million, and then you would have an estimated around 5% of that appropriation amount in reserve.
Great. Mary, thank you, and I apologize for putting you on the hot seat. You pass. With flying colors. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Myers.
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob Myers, Assistant Commissioner DNR. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue. And I want to thank Scott for all for bringing this up. It's something we've been talking with him on as the chairman of the Small Grants Program. This program is very important to us, and the success of it is something that we really want to see take off, especially the small portion, the $25,000 grants that get the money on the ground to these local citizens who want to do the right thing with these dollars. Our accomplishment plan that we presented back to you, I believe, in September, identified $319,000 as our needed budget to do this. It would expand our staff by 1.1 FTEs, which is necessary to help manage the increased workload of the FY12 grant program, increasing our applicant and grantee coaching. We need to make sure people are getting the application in and the material that we need to review is there, rather than just saying you have an incomplete application. So it's some hands, just some coaching, working with people, answering their questions, increasing program outreach, and making sure that we're completing the accomplishment reports and other administrative functions. So when we talked about our grant program budget and within our accomplishment plan, as I said, it was for $319,000. When you were marking up the language originally, the appropriation was for $279,000. We need this extra $40,000 to help make this program successful. Whether you earmark it for administration or not is up to you. It could just be changed to $279,000 to $319,000, whatever the council's wishes are. But we want to make this the best grants program available and that people understand and know how it works. And we need these dollars to help do that.
Great. Scott?
I can tell you that in my conversations regarding this issue and conversations in general about the small grants program, I do have a renewed sense of confidence, you know, that we are going to make some moves in the right direction. And I think that this is an important thing to do. And if we change that to just 319 total, remove the separation, if that makes that more appropriate, then I'm okay.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Bill.
I believe that the maker of the motion would like his motion restated and amended slightly. So, on the line beginning with dollar sign 279,000, change that to 314,000, and then everything else remains as it was drafted by staff. 319,000.
That was the. So, with that amended motion, further discussion on the motion or questions for Mr. Meyer? Brian?
Scott, does this mean that we're just giving up the idea that NIFWIP or another outdoor entity could administer this grant program? Like, we've got the two chairs of the committee that are going to ultimately make this decision here in the room today. It'd be a good opportunity to share with them some ideas if we want to think outside the box.
I certainly believe that all options are on the table, but what I don't want to see happen is next year or in when the new city council deliberates who's going to manage that it doesn't come back and say, well, we could have done a better job if you gave us proper resources. If we can make the determination, okay, if the city council makes a determination to change that, it will have been with the current administrator operating at what they believe is their highest proficiency. And that is why, I mean, that way, when the sitting council makes that comparison, okay, here's the current grant administrator at full funding, this is the best they can provide, okay, compared to something else, versus a decision, here's the current grant administrator, not at full funding, compared to something else. And I think that would be a very difficult comparison to make. And so if we restore full funding, if and when the sitting council makes that comparison or consideration, they'll be doing it looking at the best deliverable product compared to an alternative. And that's why I believe it's important, because if we don't, next year they're going to say, well, what would it have been if they had full funding? Would it have been better? And we, the answer is we would not know. And so I strongly encourage that we make this change.
Further discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none. Sandy, roll call vote.
Okay, Lester Bennett.
Yes.
Brian Bronson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Senator Colby.
Yes.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hanford.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Darby Nelson.
Yes.
Scott Rawl.
Yes.
Senator Ingrid.
Yes.
Chair Kilgore.
Yes.
Okay. 11 yes, 0 no.
Okay, so the motion is adopted. So that change has been made. David?
Sure. I'd like to talk about subdivision 15, easement monitoring.
Page number?
Page 21. I'm very troubled with the direction that we're headed here. I think that the language would essentially make nonprofit organizations very squeamish about doing easements and getting stewardship funds, which are critical to doing an easement properly. We have in the state examples of organizations that have done great easement programs, and I would argue that the state itself has done a horrible job of monitoring and enforcing easements. We have the DNR that hardly knows where all their easements are. Bowser is visiting them once every 5 years, which is well under the standard established by the land trust community that has the preponderance of easements in the country. I think we're trying to punish the wrong people here with the language. I expressed that to staff. Who forwarded it to Greg. Greg came up with some alternative language. I took his language and amended it because it didn't suit me completely. So I have a proposal for you to substitute, and I would make a motion to substitute what I'm passing around for what is in this proposed language of subdivision 15.
So the motion is to substitute the language in the one-page insert being passed around for the current language in the bill. Dave, as soon as everyone gets that, could you just walk us through the differences?
Sure. There were none. Well, I printed it off, but...
Printer didn't work.
I'm very sorry. And Greg, this is similar to what you had proposed. I think that the biggest issue was there's a desire for a clawback. So if the easement holder fails to do the job with the easements, the state gets the money back that it put into the easement. The difference that Greg and I had was I think it's incumbent on the state to provide some ability for someone to cure a default instead of just automatically, if you miss a deadline for a report or something else, the game is over, because there are all kinds of things that happen that shouldn't be treated as fatal. In the middle of the paragraph, 90 days to 120 days after the end of the close of a fiscal year, only because I've spent a lot of time working with auditors, and I know how difficult it is to get an audit within 3 months. And I thought 4 months is a far more reasonable time period. Most organizations have their fiscal year either fall at the end of the calendar year or the end of June, which is when all the auditors end up most busy. So what this would do essentially is set up or allow an organization to put funds into their monitoring and enforcement fund to ensure the the enforcement of the provisions in the conservation easement. It does allow them to commingle that with other money in their enforcement and monitoring funds. Commingling, I know to some people, is not a good thing, but frankly, it provides more safety for the easement to commingle than not to. And the reason is, you never know which easement is going to be challenged. You never know which one you got to go to the mat. We are dealing with organizations, for the most part, that have fairly significant resources in their funds, and we are adding to them. We are not the primary source of those stewardship funds. If they get a legal challenge that costs $100,000 and we put $25,000 into a fund for a project, that easement will fail without figuring out another way. If it is commingled, they will have the opportunity to use the commingled funds to defend the easement, partially because there's a precedence issue. You don't want to lose one easement because the next one might be challenged if you get a court challenge. You have to be able to go to the mat for whatever comes your way, or you may find that you've set a precedent that is not good. So the idea of commingling is widely used, and I think it's appropriate to follow standard practice in the industry. So those are the big changes. It gives more flexibility to the organizations. I'm happy to read the language if you would like me to. No?
I think I've got it.
Okay. Or answer any questions?
Just a clarification. So it's got the clawback provision in there. And the second question I have, which I think is now you answered, is looking at the first sentence, the money that's appropriated for easement monitoring and enforcement needs to be directed only at outdoor heritage funds. That's separate from commingling. I mean, these are two separate issues.
Money appropriated in this section for easement monitoring enforcement may be spent only on activities included in an easement monitoring and enforcement plan contained within the account.
So directed only at outdoor fund.
I don't know that that says only at outdoor. I think it's implied, but it would... Oh, now you've asked me a question. I'm not 100% sure. It has to be on easement monitoring and enforcement, and it can only be spent within the accomplishment fund.
And then I would assume by constitution that means directly related to the use of the fund. Greg?
Mr. Chair, not necessarily. That was another option to include in here. But to say it only would apply to those easements acquired with the heritage fund, I don't think we want that.
No.
Because of the co-mingling on the enforcement part of it. So you don't see that here. But they would have to spend it based on the accomplishment plan. So whatever specified in the accomplishment plan would drive how they could use the money.
Okay, because I saw that as two issues. One is you can co-mingle the funds. So let's say you have funds on easement programs, not only in Minnesota, but throughout North America. You can co-mingle and create one fund, one corpus. But the amount that's been allocated should be directed towards outdoor heritage funds. So the only time that this would be an issue is if, for example, an enforcement action was taken, you might draw on outdoor heritage funds for an activity in somewhere else or on some other project not funded by the outdoor heritage fund. Is that correct? Okay, that helps. Scott?
One point of clarification, a question I wanted to ask a long time ago. It says we're going to hold these funds in a separate account. So if one of our appropriation recipients comes and their program is six easements, okay, is that one account or six accounts? One account for each easement. Because if it's one account for, quote, six easements, then in theory you'd have some commingling where you could use appropriation money from these five to defend this one. Okay, so my question was, is it a separate account for each easement, or is it a separate account for the appropriation? Because if it remains a separate account for the appropriation, you would then get the ability to commingle those dollars to defend one another.
I believe the way this is written, it's a separate account for stewardship or for monitoring and enforcement, period.
For whatever
that. So that could span multiple appropriation years. Multiple projects.
I think we're opening a huge issue here that has been debated quite a bit. If this is supported, I would ask the, I see one of the chairs is left, but the incoming chairs to spend a great deal of time on this easement question, and that whatever comes out as a recommendation here, we view it as a starting point and not chiseled in stone. It couldn't be changed one comma or one word. Because I think that the easement monitoring enforcement issue is a huge one. We've all heard that, and it needs to be resolved. But we have not spent a great deal of time here debating it. And I think this could be a good starting point for that debate. And I would hate to see what has happened in the past and don't change a word in this document. And I think that this can be a good starting point moving forward.
Plus,
let me just kind of backtrack. I'm not sure I totally agree or disagree with your assessment, David. Maybe we've got an exceptional colleague. But I talked with Bowser, NRCS, and the Minnesota Land Trust, which I'm involved in easements with all of those. And it appears that, under the RIMWRP, Bowser's got the first 30 years. It's transferred over to NRCS after that period of time. The Minnesota Land Trust has money set aside for the monitoring and enforcement of those easements according to the title that's been registered on the abstract defining that easement. So we've got the legal description, and then we've got the physical monitoring and management of this. Bowser, in talking with them, they've got a three-year commitment to monitor the easements and then periodically look at random easements to go in and check and monitor, and if there's enforcement, then going back to the original title opinion and the abstract company for definition and enforcement through civil court. How much of this are we looking at something that's extremely broke, or just in certain areas of the state there's some problems? Because I frankly don't see that in our particular area. Maybe we're different.
I would tell you, since I was on the Accreditation Commission and the Minnesota Land Trust received accreditation, I could not vote on it because I'm a donor to them, but to get accreditation, they have to monitor annually every property. That is the standard in the industry. Bowser has a 3 or 5 year standard. I would argue that they do that because of resources, but it's not the best strategy to not have contact with a landowner for 3 or 5 years and then discover a problem. It's not good. DNR compared to Bowser looks horrible because they have not monitored some easements as of a couple years ago ever. They had some wild and scenic river easements they'd never been to in 25 years. And they're working on the issue, but they didn't even know where all the easements were. So it's really what organization you look at in terms of the monitoring. I think enforcement, I haven't personally heard of a lot of issues with easement enforcement in Minnesota that have gotten to the point where someone's gotten away with something due to the lack of monitoring. But I think there's a risk with some DNR easements that that could be the case just because of the length of time that it's taken. But I do know that they are a lot more serious about looking at the easements than they have been in the past because the issue's been raised that they haven't done the job they should have. Does that answer your question?
Yes. It's adding to the information we're absorbing. Just one other one. At the start of the easement of the RIMWRP, and Kevin will probably clarify this, there's a certain amount of allocation for easement monitoring at that easement execution. And are we doubling the effort here by adding other monies to it, or should they be looking at that money for the easement that they set up in a trust fund to the first 30 years and then the next 30 years under NRCS? I'm not sure how that fits in.
Well, I think most of this language applies to non-governmental organizations. The whole question of how Bowser and DNR does their work is separate, and there's an appropriation here recommended of $750,000 to go to Bowser for long-term easement monitoring, which is a great down payment on the work they've got to do, because what happens is they've got more easements every year, which are a tremendous deal for us. You know, it stays on the tax rolls, it's preserved for conservation, you know, they're a great tool, but they have to depend on annual appropriation to go out and monitor those easements. So setting up a fund for our government agencies to actually go out and do this in perpetuity, which as long as the easements last, is very important.
Another quick question. Other than Minnesota Land Trust, what are the other non-government agencies that do the easements?
Ducks Unlimited certainly
okay,
does.
Okay. But don't they turn that over to the DNR?
Not on all cases.
And U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
In some cases, but not 100%.
Okay.
Jim?
Yeah, David, I'm just curious. I've never seen one of these annual reports, but if we've got these easement funds all grouped together, I mean, how can we tell if they're fully funded? I mean, if you've got money from, you know, a number of different organizations coming into these funds every year, I mean, how difficult is it to know whether it's actually fully funded or the money's been diverted or used someplace else? Or,
well, you know, the art of this whole issue is that you're really talking about two features. The first is you look at, if you're doing it appropriately, and through our accomplishment plans, I know they have to be, you would look and say, it costs me X number of dollars as an organization to go out and monitor that property every year. And if you assume a 5% return, I need 20 times that money so that every year I'm earning that 5% so I can go do that work. And that's a relatively small amount of money. Then you do an analysis that says every 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, I'm going to have a minor or a major legal challenge. And I need to endow the ability to defend that legal challenge, even if it comes in the first year, because you never know when it's going to come. And so you do a risk analysis. And so you're really blending both the monitoring as well as the enforcement into one fund.
But I guess my question is, say the Nature Conservancy takes on easements from somebody else of another 1 million acres, you know, and so their responsibilities increase dramatically, but we go on and we see their fund is basically the same. I mean, how can you tell if there's enough money in there every year to do the job that this whole organization is required to do?
Now you're asking a question as well.
Okay.
Because the real answer is, if you look at what's been set up on a nationwide basis for accreditation, the accreditation of a land trust would tell you that you have those funds that are adequate. I have not proposed, but I'd be happy to see come along, that we would only do easements with groups that have accreditation, because they have to meet those requirements that they're doing these things at in an industry standard method. The difficulty with that is the accreditation program is new, and not everybody has yet had a chance to become accredited. So I would tell you in 2 or 3 or 4 years, it'll make a lot of sense. The Nature Conservancy is going through accreditation right now, but they're a huge organization. It's over 2 years for them to go through accreditation in 50 state programs. You wouldn't want to exclude the Nature Conservancy because they're not accredited while they're going through the process. Ducks Unlimited is going through the process. So ultimately, what we should be looking at is accredited groups to answer your question.
Scott?
Hi. I truly believe that Dave is probably one of the most knowledgeable members of the council on easements. The one question I have, not being near as knowledgeable about easements, is how do we know that the money that's set aside in their commingled funds doesn't get spent on a totally unrelated project? I mean, would that be almost impossible to determine?
It's almost impossible to know because you will have ebb and flow of needs for any easement. I mean, if you hold an easement, there are times when the land will change ownership, and the new owners will have a question about it, and you put more effort that year into the stewardship or the monitoring than you would in a year where you've had a landowner for 20 years. There is a
How do you really feel?
Oh, that was what happens when you inherit your daughter's dog.
I presided over a graduation ceremony at a college last Friday night, and instead of conferring degrees on everybody earning a Bachelor of Science, I conferred the degrees on everybody earning a Bachelor of Silence. So the dog's not
it
so
happens.
Bad.
It happens. All right.
So my second part of the question is obviously this is language that goes in our bill that has to then be approved. Okay. I mean, if I ask that question and the answer is it's really, really hard to tell, okay, is we need to put forth language that we can ultimately get approved. Can this language, if we adopt it the way you have it, do we conceivably believe that that would or could be approved?
You know, I would tell you that it's likely to garner some attention, and I would think that you'd have the Nature Conservancy and the Land Trust defending or recommending some slight modifications that would make sense within their world as well as answering the question.
Further discussion. We have a motion before us, members, to replace Subdivision 15 language with the language that David has passed out. Further discussion. Greg.
Well, Mr. Chair, one issue, well, actually two, but one's real minor. If you look on clause two, I think that should read, you should delete of the state and after default insert by the state. That would be parallel with number three, and it's clearer that way.
So just restate that. So after the word notification,
notification, delete of the state, and then after of the default, so if you want notification of the default by the state.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
And the other issue is this does not limit the expenditures within Minnesota. And I don't know if that's an issue for council members. And I mean, if you look at the constitutional language, it's supposed to be for the benefit of Minnesotans' expenditure of money. I didn't know if one place to do that is where that second sentence where it talks about monitoring enforcement conservation easement. Say within Minnesota to make sure that it's only spent. I know ducks are limited to the nationwide thing, but I think you might have some issues if this money was being spent on enforcing easements outside of these.
You know, I can live with that.
So those two changes to the amendment. Rick?
Okay. Yes, David, maybe Scott's question a little different.
Sure.
So if this is approved, do you recognize it in the legislative process and maybe changes to it? That's a give and take, and are you having ownership where nothing can be changed on this document?
I am proposing that this language is far more reasonable in terms of our partnership with non-governmental organizations that was within Subdivision 15 as proposed. I draw no line in the sand. I'm looking for something that makes sense. If it were up to me, I draw a line in the sand on that $750,000 and send it off to the Minnesota Foundation so Bowser and everyone else can never grab it back. But I haven't gone there. This is not my line in the sand. This is my let's get something reasonable on the table that at least would work versus what was proposed.
Further discussion?
Just one quick question. David, have you run this by Minnesota Land Trust, Ducks Unlimited?
Just for everything.
Just you. You know, and I think that would be, you know, there probably is going to be some good comments coming from those organizations.
I have absolutely no doubt that we would want them. I know this language would not work for them as proposed, and this is, as Scott said, I've had a little experience with conservation easements. This at least would allow what standard practice to take place.
Comments or questions? Okay. Hearing none. Sam, could you take the roll call vote, please?
Okay, Lester Bench.
Yes.
Ryan Blonson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Senator Colby.
Yes.
Representative Bumper.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Ingersoll.
Yes.
Darby Nelson.
Yes.
Scott Rahl.
Yes.
Chair Kilgore.
Yes.
Okay. 11 yes, 0 no.
So the motion is adopted. Further discussion, Les.
Mr. Chair, Bill, you sent out, or you sent out an email last week, the ABCs of land acquisition for the DNR. I looked that over, and I do share some of the concerns that you have, Rick, as far as eliminating the DNR from the approval, pre-approval of the land. And I'm wondering if this is...
It's not from the pre-approval of the land. The land managers, the area wildlife managers, are still involved in the initial selection process.
Okay, I guess I'm not saying we aren't. This is the purely rule with the, or procedure within the DNR. This is not statutory backed or rule.
What the DNR presented to Pheasants Forever as their process.
Is the change going to create conflict within the DNR as far as removing that statement from our appropriation bill?
I can't answer that question. That's a prediction of the future.
Members, we have before us the bill. Jim.
Yeah, I'd like to make another amendment. I'm on page 3, 2E. And I would just like to change that to 2 additional pilot focus areas.
Chair, my... amendment also strikes everything following contained.
Yes.
Yeah. Acquisition, restoration, and enhancement must be within the 2 additional pilot focus areas.
Okay, discussion on that motion? Greg?
Mr. Chair, just a clarification. Jim, do you want you only in the new pilot areas, or what about the existing pilot areas? This would seem to preclude them from studying in the existing. And I'm wondering if you don't want to just say it'll be within 4 pilot focus areas contained in the adoption plan, or something to that.
Well, I'm reading from there. Project proposal. It says the Prairie Recovery Project partnership will be expanded from the current 2 focus areas to an additional 3 focus areas, total 5. So I'm saying that they can increase to 4, 2 additional focus areas.
I think, Mr. Chair, I think we need to reword that a little bit then to make sure that it's expanded in the existing ones. So I think the way it was read is limited to all the ones.
So suggested language that
well, Mr. Chair, there's a couple ways you can do it. You can say within the four pilot focus areas contained in the accomplishment plan. That'd be one way. Or you could say within existing and 2 additional pilot focus areas.
I would prefer that second.
Okay, so within the existing and 2 additional?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Further discussion or discussion on the motion? Okay. Hearing none. Sandy?
Okay. Les Bench.
Yes.
Brian Bronson.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Foley.
Yes.
Representative Guthrie.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes. Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Anderson.
Yes.
Derby Nelson.
Yes.
Scott Raw.
Yes.
Chair Kilgore.
Yes.
Okay. 11 yes, 0 no.
The motion is adopted. Okay. Members, further discussion on the motion to adopt the bill. Representative Hansen.
Yes, on page 23, I move to delete the amendments to 97.856. Our statutory responsibility is to make recommendations to the legislature on appropriations of money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And I believe that this provision goes beyond the statutory responsibility of the council, where you're making a recommendation on policy beyond money. You're going back and amending the original authorizing statute.
Well, want to restate the motion?
To delete the language on page 23 and 24, beginning with 97A.056, amended as follows. E, public members. Page 24, the language set for leading item 7. Discussion our section.
Discussion on the motion. Wes?
Doesn't this create a smoother transition to have this language changed?
Chair, less it may, but that's really a moot point because the statutory authority for the council is to make recommendations on appropriations of money, not on policy. And if the chairs of the committees want to take this up or introduce a bill on that, that's different. But the statutory responsibility of the council is to make recommendations on appropriations.
Scott?
If this language is approved as it's currently written, and passes, aren't they already, isn't that the equivalent of them giving us the go-ahead or approving those changes? We're just putting forth those for their consideration. And once, if they approve them, then they obviously agree with that, and if they don't, then they don't. But, I mean, we're not, it's not like we're setting the policy, we're making a recommendation.
Rick?
And specifically, making a recommendation is prohibited under the statute. Your authority of the council is only to make recommendations on appropriation of the money.
David?
So, Bill, what do you
think? Senator Engelbert.
I don't know. I guess I'm certainly listening to the statutory language and also the common sense approach that Scott is talking about is something that can be dealt with, I think, at any given time on anything, it seems to me. So that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen. Whatever comes out of here is going to be part of the stone as far as policy. So they're strictly recommendations. Rick, you've said that several times, and that's what they are, recommendations. So they can be changed in any way.
Further discussion on the motion? Okay. Hearing none, Sam.
Lester Bench.
No.
Brian Bronson.
No.
Jim Cox.
No.
Claire McLeody.
Yes.
Representative Bunker.
No.
Rick Hansen.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Anderson.
Yes.
Darby Nelson.
No.
Scott Ball.
No.
Chair Kilgore.
No.
Four yes, seven no.
So the motion is not adopted. Okay. Further discussion on the motion to approve the 2012 appropriations bill as amended.
Yeah.
Right?
On Page number 2, section 2C, I move to amend the appropriation to $2.5 million. So it would be a $241,000 increase.
Councilor Bronson moves to amend section 2C on page 2 for the amount to read $2,500,000, and for the first sentence of the language to read $2,500,000.
Mr. Chair, that is what was originally requested and submitted.
Further discussion on the motion? Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, roll call vote.
Okay, Lester Bench.
I would say no.
Ryan Bronson.
Yes.
Joe Cox.
No.
Senator Foley.
No.
Representative Bunker.
No.
Representative Hanson.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
No.
Senator Ingram.
No.
Darby Nelson.
No.
Scott Rall.
No.
Chair Kilgore.
No.
2 yes, 9 no.
Okay, so the motion is not adopted. David.
I just want to follow up on the administrative budget. We need to amend the administrative budget consistent with our earlier motions in this package.
We just reflect what you approved in the bill. So the bill now contains the new amount.
Where would that be?
Oh, that would be. Oh.
That would be. $670,000.
Okay.
Further, what is that number now?
$520,000
in each year. Mr. Chair? Right. I move to amend that appropriation to $470,000 per year.
So a motion is to amend the language on page... I'm sorry, Bill?
New language on page 14, item 60, from $591,000 for fiscal year to $470,000 for fiscal year. $471,000
for fiscal year. Ryan, what would that have been?
And restore the professional technical services number to $90,000 per year. That's what that reflects.
Further discussion on that motion? Sandy?
Okay, Lester Bench?
No.
Ryan Bronson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
No.
Senator Foley?
Yes.
Representative Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Hanson.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Ingram.
No.
Darby Nelson.
Yes.
Scott Rall.
No.
Chair Kilgore.
Yes.
7 yes, 4 no.
So the motion is adopted. Okay, so now we have a total amount that is $1,000 more than it as is printed in the bill. Correct?
That's correct.
All right. Okay. Further discussion on the bill for the amendments. Representative Gunther, is your hand raised for any further discussion?
No, I'm just trying to keep the dogs quiet.
You're doing a good job. The milk bones are flying out of your hand. Okay. Hearing no further discussion on the bill, Sandy, please take the roll call vote. Remember, members, we need 9 votes, affirmative votes, to forward this bill onto the legislature as a recommendation of this council.
Lester Bench.
Yes.
Ryan Bronson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Senator Kobe.
Yes.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hanson.
No.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Ingridson.
Yes.
Darby Nelson.
Yes.
Scott Robb.
Yes.
Jerry Kilgore.
Yes.
10 yes, 1 no.
So the motion is adopted. We have at least 9 affirmative members. We have our appropriations bill for fiscal 2012. Okay. Members, the last order of business, opportunity for public comment.
Mr. Chair, no one contacted me at any time. If anybody in the audience would like to speak, please raise your hand. Seeing no hands raised.
Okay. Wait. One last item.
Lester?
Oh. If I could use it on a high note. Senator Ingridson and myself and Jim Cox were part of the Pioneer Heritage Conservation Trust organization in Evansville, Minnesota. Many of you don't know where Evansville is, but it's a small town in western Minnesota. They awarded us the Habitat Conservation Legacy Award. This goes to all council members. I'd like to read one little short paragraph on it, and as a kind of an up, and I'll try to read it without a squaw. Our time on Earth is brief, yet the land goes on forever. Carrying with it the mark of each succeeding landowner as fleeting trespassers on the land that belongs to future generations, we must touch the land gently, caring for it as true stewards, so that those who assess our record will see our love and respect and for the land and life. From the conservation area.
Very nice. Very good. Okay. David.
I just would like to know that this is your last meeting.
For several of us.
For several people, yeah. And thanks to all of you. It's been a great night. And with Mike, you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
I second that.
I agree.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's amazing. You know, 2 years ago, we sat in this building and looked around the table, and we probably were strangers to most each other. And you think of, in 2 years, what, $250 million in fishery and wildlife habitat money's gone out the door, or will hopefully be going out the door with this recommendation. That's amazing work. So, you know, this is really a legacy. It's been really fun to be part of it. Darby?
Yeah, I switched topics too quickly, and I didn't get it in, but I really wanted to thank Scott Rall for all the bird dogging that he's done, all the work that he's done on conservation projects. It's an extremely important part of our mission. Thank you very much, Scott, for all you have done on behalf of that program.
He has the patience of a saint. Any further? Any further?
I don't know where the top.
All right, you're right. Any further discussion? Motion to adjourn. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion approved.